All right, we now have a quorum. We're gonna call this meeting Wednesday, July 20th, council briefing to order. If we could, at this point, let me pass the microphone to our esteemed colleague, Adam McGue. Mr. McGue, if you would introduce our invocation, this our reverend this morning for the prayer.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor.
Close the door.
It is my honor to recognize Reverend Dr. Christopher Garrata of St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church, which is in District 13, Ms. Gates. The Reverend Dr. Chris Garrata began his ministry as the 8th Rector of St. Michael and All Angels on August 15, 2016. He previously served as the Rector of Calvary Episcopal Church in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. He also served as Associate Rector of St. Luke's in Birmingham, Alabama, and was Seminarian at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and St. John's in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dr. Garrata earned his Bachelor of Arts in Religious Studies from Stetson University, Master of Theological Studies from Emory University, Master of Divinity from Virginia Theological Seminary, and Doctorate of Ministry from Duke University. He is recognized as rising leader in the Episcopal Church, presenting regularly at church-wide conferences, seminars, and retreats, and the Consortium for Endowed Episcopal Parishes. He's a native of Florida, a classically trained musician, and amateur cook. He and his wife, Nicole, have 3 children, Braden, Lena, and Anna Marie. And we are very thankful that you're here to open us in prayer this morning.
All rise, please.
Let us pray. Gracious God, you have brought us in safety to this new day. Preserve us with your mighty power this day, so that in all we do, we will work toward your sacred purposes. We thank you for the gift of this life and ask your blessing upon the world you have made. Have compassion on those who suffer from any grief or trouble. Help us, in the midst of our struggles, to confront one another without hatred or bitterness, but to work together with patience and respect. Give to the people of our city and our country a zeal for justice and the strength of forbearance, that we may use our liberty in accordance with your gracious will. Guide all those who govern and hold authority in this nation, in this state, and most especially in the city of Dallas, and kindle in every heart the true love of peace. Make our lives a sign of your love to this broken world, that unity may overcome estrangement, forgiveness heal guilt, and joy conquer despair. Grant that the bonds of our common humanity, by which all your children are united one to another, may be so transformed by your Spirit that your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. All this we ask in the name of God, our Creator, our Redeemer and Sustainer. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll now take our morning open microphone speakers.
Mr. Carraway.
And you want to go now?
Sorry. If I could, real quick.
All right. I'm sorry. Hold on one second. Mr. McGue.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I just wanted to recognize former City Councilmember Bill Blades, former District 10 representative, who I stand on his shoulders. A lot of things we're accomplishing now for the work he's done. But also today we have, he continues to lead and serve in the community, we have with him members of the Troop 890 Boy Scouts, and they are here working on earning their badge and have been with a couple of us this morning. And so I just wanted to recognize Jacob Anderson, Will Cronister, and William Hossenbauer. If y'all could just stand just real quickly.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Ms. Callahan.
I just want to say a welcome to the Boy Scouts this morning. Tonight we're going to have our Friends of Scouting celebration. I feel strongly that we've reached our goal, and that we're the, out in Cimarron, where I'm my district, I'm the Friends of Scouting chair, and we've actually reached our goal of more than 100%. So keep up the good work. We had a neighborhood town hall last night. We had a number of Boy Scouts in attendance, so they're getting very active, and that's what we need in this city. Every time there's a civic affair or any type of there's a local program, I encourage our scouts, both boy and girl scouts, to go out and attend those. Thank you very much.
All right. And prior to that, I'm going to ask Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Adam Madrona to pass on some information for us.
Okay.
Take time.
It's really, I'm still in shock, but I have a broken heart, but we lost former Mayor Pro Tem John Loza last night.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be here if it was for John Loza. He believed in me. This is hard, y'all. He was a great leader for our community. Believed in me when he asked me to run for school board. A lot of people think it was probably my family, but it wasn't. It was several other communities, and John was one of them. I just want to thank him for everything he did for this city. He was a good friend. We're definitely going to miss him. He served from 1997 to 2005 as Mayor Pro Tem. We love you, John, and I just wanted to make sure that his partner, David Hill, wanted me to announce that this morning. Funeral arrangements are pending, and we'll let you guys know, but I just wanted to share that with everybody. But we lost a great person for our city.
Councilmember Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I echo what Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Madrona said. John Loza was a pillar in the community, especially in District 2, but across the entire city of Dallas. He loved this city. It is hard. He was my friend as well. He also encouraged me to run for city council, and other things that I've done in the past always supported me. He could sometimes be a bit of a curmudgeon at times on certain things, but that was John. That's who he was, and that's what made him lovable and made him who many respected, regardless of if you sparred with him or you agreed with him, he would go to bat for you. And on behalf of the LGBT community, he was the person who started the non-discrimination ordinance for our people in this city. We will miss you, John. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilman Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. John was a consultant early, and when I first decided to run for office, and many of you may or may not know that Rosa Gallegos, my assistant, was also John's assistant, and John went to the same high school I did, North Mesquite, and also his brothers, Michael and Vincent, were friends of mine. We played football together, so I knew them well before I knew John, so this is a terrible tragedy, a shock. We just saw him the other day in the flag room, so I'm absolutely astonished. So my heart goes out to his family and just Godspeed.
All right. Councilman Atkins.
Yes. You know, it's kind of difficult to sit around the horseshoe and see how many people John have touched. I know he touched me when I first ran for city council. A couple of weeks ago, we talked. When I do try to make different decisions for the city of Dallas, he always there. He always had open hands, and he loved the city. You know, believe it or not, he loved the city, and he did a whole lot of volunteer work. And offer condolences to the family. But John is, you know, we're going to miss him. But then, too, but it's a whole lot of spirit at City Hall that John's going to remember. Thank you.
Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I served with John the entire 8 years, from 97 to 2005. And he was probably my favorite council member, even though he could be so snarky. Oh, but, you know, you just had to like him. And this is a terrible shock. And I know his partner, David, is, I'm sure, devastated. I'm so sorry to hear this.
All right. Let me just say and add on that John and I, we served on the Fair Park Trust Fund, South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund. That was the beginning of us serving collectively together. And he's been a very stern, strong, committed leader in the city of Dallas. And his commitment and things will never, ever go away, the great things that he's done here. I'm going to ask and so order the city manager on behalf of John Loza to lower our flags here at City Hall and across our city facilities at half mast. And then also let's take one moment of silence in John Loza's honor. Thank you. Madam Secretary.
Thank you and good morning. This morning we will hear all registered speakers. We will begin with Robert Ceccarelli, Arash Farisette, and Yvette Balazé. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Caraway. And also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Robert Ceccarelli.
I've been outspoken about the homeless situation. There is an emergency that needs to be attended immediately. This is the bus passes at dark. This is going to be a third time that they're going to take away the reduced bus pass for the homeless at the end of the month. I know you don't get along with DART because of the working poor. There's going to be a meeting this Tuesday at 6 o'clock. And I need people to show out because no one is showing up for the homeless at all. This is your time to speak up about something that's going to be devastating for the homeless. It's going to be from $250 to $5 or from $40 to $80 for 1 month. And I'm lucky if I can make it. But if I can't make it, you know what will happen to the other homeless people? It's going to be devastating. It's going to be, you can't do anything without transportation. And the second thing besides housing is transportation for the homeless. They made a survey about that from NDHA, and it's very, very important. And without, if you don't show out, DART's going to take advantage of the homeless and they get done with the working poor. So please show out and speak up. Siobhan Moore, the NDHA, will tell you why it's happening. So if you need information, but please, you know, it's number one problem here in the city of Dallas, and so far, there hasn't been any participation at all. You know, it's really ridiculous that no one shows up here to speak or be in attendance at the different homeless commission meetings. It's really crazy there's no support. But please do it. Okay, show out, please. Okay, at least one time, Tuesday, 6 o'clock at dark. The other thing I need to talk about is I had a meeting with Mr. Thomas a couple weeks ago. We got to try and get a compromise here. The last couple of meetings have been completely disastrous. There hasn't been any headway at all. And there's two words we need to talk about, investment and accountability. Accountability for the homeless and make sure that the people that make the investments get the best bang out of their dollar. I have a suggestion. Mr. Thomas liked it. I'm trying to have a couple of people to meet with in the next 2 weeks, maybe be standing in front of the whole city council, at least to the Human Needs Committee again. I need some more time, though. I need more than 3 minutes. And this can happen. I really believe even the most conservative people in here, Ms. Gates, Ms. Grayson, I believe you would be on this, too, okay? It's something that you'll be holding homes accountable for what they're doing. And I think you'll like it. But give me a little bit of time, meet with a couple of people that we just talked about, well, that I just talked to, and we'll come to a conclusion. Mr. Nagore, I think we need his help right now with the construction, at least of something for the homeless to be live in. And Mr. Jenkins, he talked about a school where the immigrants can live in right now. Maybe we can use that school as transitional housing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ceccarelli.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary.
Arash Farisette.
Good morning, Council. Mayor Pro Tem.
How you doing?
My name is Arash Rasat. I am a member of Workers' Defense and a proud supporter of Working Texans for Paid Sick Leave. I reside in District 14. And last week, our coalition turned in approximately 130,000 petitions to the city in support of a paid sick leave ordinance. We went out there in the scorching heat for 2 months. We went to churches. We went to train stops, bus stops. We knocked on our neighbors' doors to get these signatures. Overwhelmingly, the people that we spoke to supported it and gladly signed it. The hard part was going out there and braving the heat. So the handouts that I passed out to y'all today show that paid sick leave ordinances provide benefits such as reducing health care costs, reducing the number of unnecessary emergency room visits, and they also don't have a negative effect on unemployment. I'd like y'all to peruse those at your convenience. But actually, the rest of my time, I want to share a personal story. I've worked in the restaurant industry here in Dallas since 2005, about 13 years, and I never had sick leave. None of my coworkers had sick leave. 80% of people in the food service industry do not have sick leave. So what I saw is people would come to work sick. Either they would tell us that we had to come in, but often we felt like we needed to come in, and we wouldn't say that we were sick because the wages are so low that if you miss one day of work, then you can't put food on your own table. And so people would come in sick, and then they would pass the sickness to each other, the coworkers, and it would just pass around the restaurant for 2 weeks. And if you imagine if it's being passed around all the coworkers who are preparing the food for 2 weeks, where else is it going? It's going to the people who are eating. And there is research that shows that municipalities that have passed sick leave laws in the past had the sickness rate for the entire city go down. Now, we didn't come to work sick because we had any kind of ill will towards the people that we were feeding. I love making food for people, and I love it when people tell me that they enjoyed their meal. I was a cook, a cleaner, a disher, and also a valet driver. And I worked at about 50 different places over the years because part of that time I was a contractor. And it was the same anywhere. And these were places that I've seen a lot of y'all here, y'all there. I wish the mayor was here, actually, to hear this. Yeah. So I hope that y'all in your deliberations will certify this as quickly as possible and pass it into law. I know y'all do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary.
Yvette Belize.
All right. Hi, how are y'all? A city leader's most important job is to monitor the threshold of people so massacres don't occur. Read up on group mentality and social psychology. So when the black chief of police, David Brown, fired a racist cop who caused injury and the mayor gives the racist immigrant cop, Jesus Martinez, his job back, the whole black community loses hope and there arises the creation of an injustice that will be reacted upon. It's inevitable. Rehiring Jesus Martinez made it automatically more dangerous for every single police officer on the force. People can't tell the difference between a good cop or a monster like Jesus Martinez because you force good cops to back that dirty thing. You throw this tainted stain of a human back in the mix with the pure, clean officers. And when the wash comes out, they all look stained. I talk to cops all the time, and they absolutely hate Jesus Martinez. For that one racist immigrant cop, Jesus Martinez, you risked the lives of every single American cop, and you took the lives of five. Now, why am I focusing on him being an immigrant? Well, Jesus Martinez has a badge, and he can kill black American people with the mayor's permission now and run back to Mexico where all his ties are. His mother, siblings, nieces, all in Mexico. Martinez has no ties here in America, and he owns no real property and is a renter. Medrano encouraged Martinez to get rid of me and black people in the Deep Ellum area. This resulted in Jesus Martinez arranging to have me run over by a car. This resulted in Officer Shane Owens quitting 2 weeks after I reported the incident to City Council last year. Murdering me was pretty abhorrent of Medrano to facilitate using Deep Ellum Community Watch and Deep Ellum Foundation's racist members to injure and kill black people from South Dallas or people who look homeless. This didn't work on me, and now Medrano and all of them have justice served. Deep Ellum is South Dallas. I represent the intelligence, integrity, grit of my brothers and sisters in South Dallas. I fight and I win for South Dallas. Not anyone up there in this room, and even if Felder were here, none of them but me fight and win for South Dallas. So just so you know, I am running for the District 7 Dallas City Council seat for 2019. So South Dallas will have representation. So those of you who will still be here next year, I want you to know I'm an activist. I stand for what's right, so my opposition loses every time. I play to win. You can't go wrong when you stay right, and there's a book called The Bible. Read it and get to know me. When you are scared or feeling like murdering a black person, just get on your knees and pray to that black man named Jesus. Jesus was black, yes, and Jesus didn't have an address. He was also homeless. So please remember that when you make decisions in the future.
Well, thank you, Madam Secretary.
Marcus Kilburn. Not present. Rhonda Richardson.
Good morning to each of you and everyone that's in this room. And I'd like to give praise to my Father, whom is in heaven. I would like to read this letter, and it'll go kind of fast, and then I'll get to where I'm going. First of all, I'd like to say that I live at Brandon Mill, 8081 Marvin D. Love Freeway, apartment 105, Dallas, Texas, 75237. I was retaliatory evicted on the 8th of June, so I've been homeless ever since. I've used all of my money, staying in one hotel, got bit by some bed bugs, so I called the code enforcement. And the guy told me there's nothing we can do because if we go over there to the place where the bed bugs are at, we're going to violate the people that are staying there, basically those who are getting bit. Well, my second instance is I wrote a letter to Mr. T.C. Broadnet. This dated February the 2nd, 2018. Request an appointment with city manager as soon as possible. And as my letter reads, it says, Dear Mr. T.C. Broadnax, this is an urgent matter that requires your immediate attention. I am Ms. Wanda R. Richardson, and I need to shed some light on the fraud, theft, sloppy bookkeeping, and deceitful trade practices that are continuously repeating itself by the apartment managers, which is Brandon Mill Apartments. Tenants are being charged around 45 water sewage bills that were not informed to prospective tenants prior to moving in on a special offered by the Brandon Mill Apartments. Now, I'll just touch a little bit about that. Now, my second concern is this Texas Property Code 92.331, Retaliation by Landlord. And this is for the city attorney, Mr. Larry Castro. I've been trying to get to Mr. Larry Castro for 2 weeks to make an appointment to file a complaint, as the city of Dallas says that I'm able to do so. But I'm being blocked. I've tried to contact Mr. T.C. Broadnax, but I'm being blocked. So the 92.331, Retaliation by Landlord, speaks. A landlord may not retaliate against a tenant, which is myself, Rhonda Richardson, by taking an action described by subsection B, because the tenant, in good faith, exercises an attempt to exercise against the landlord a right or remedy granted to the tenant by lease, municipal ordinance, or federal or state statute. Complains to a governmental entity responsible for enforcing building or housing codes, a public utility, or a civic or nonprofit agency, or the tenant. Well, I have several complaints that I sent out to housing, and I'm not going to go into the plaintiffs. It's about 10 complaints. And my understanding is that I was able to file a complaint with the city attorney, and I have not been able to do so. I have a CD with all the fraudulent documentation. My lease was forged. My money was stolen. I have a whole lot of fraud going on. And the people that I consider as friends who are tenants are being kicked out illegally without any type of judicial intervention. I've called the mayor's office. I was told that he could not do anything for me. So I'm asking justice and immediacy for the tenants at Brandon Mill Apartments, because we have no one to turn to. And I'm going to send this right here. I have disqualified Judge Mark Greenberg, and I'm on a roll. I'm going to get the rest of them one by one. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Fair housing. Okay.
Sonia Blue.
Good morning. morning, council members. My name is Sonia Blue. I reside at 18110 Marsh Lane, apartment 1303, Dallas, Texas, 75287. I'm coming to the mayor of Dallas. I'm complaining to you about Hood that has not taken proper actions of DHA Housing Authority abuse. They are well aware of the issues. I spoke with the staff member, Mrs. C.C. Lenard of Hood, on several occasions. She knows about the true facts on cameras at 2423 Cliff Manor, Dallas, Texas, 75211. Manager Ms. Michelle Fields and maintenance Melvin, along with other staff members entering my apartment without knowledge or my consent, along with CEO code compliances of Dallas Housing. My rights were violated. Mr. Greg Mays, attorney for DHA Housing Authority, is aware of improper entering of my property. He and president and CEO board members witnessed improper entrance of DHA Housing employees after viewing the cameras. That's when Mr. Greg Mays came to me and said, Ms. Blue, you don't have to pay no rent. You don't have to pay no deposit. We will take care of you. Greg Mays, attorney for DHA Housing Authority, looked at me in my face a few days later and said he didn't say that. That's abusing your authority. Greg Mays is still attorney for DHA Housing Authority, now DHA Housing Solution for North Texas. I've complained against Dallas Fair Housing with the city of Dallas, Mr. Barkdale's Higgins. He is aware of the issues. He did not submit my paperwork. That was his decision. That was not fair to me because he's employed by the mayor of Dallas. Mishandling documents, facts. He took what he wanted of my complaint against Ms. Michelle Fields and manager of Cliff Manor, 2423 Fort Worth Avenue, apartment 1207, Dallas, Texas, 75211. About my dog, June the 13th, 2018. He was not concerned about other complaints. I asked you, the mayor of Dallas, to compensate me for my suffering and my unpleasant staying in your city of Dallas. For future references, you may want to reevaluate the employees of Hood and DHA Housing Solution of North Texas so that the people needs help coming behind me will not have to endure what I suffered. And I need to speak with someone after.
You will. Are you finished? Thank you.
Yes, I'm
finished. And Fair Housing is going to get with you now.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Dale Smith.
We couldn't quite get that to work, so I'm going to hit this, and for 30 seconds, you're going to take a look at what I'm here. Here's the problem. We sent that to every TV station in this city because they have eliminated every black community interactive program that existed, from Insights with Rochelle Brown, if some of you guys remember that, on and on and on. So what we did, we presented the newscast to the city of Dallas in January to get on cable access, since the cable access channels were supposed to be access to the public. And we haven't had a chance to actually get that done. We're doing 1.6 million hits right now on blackcontemporarytv.com. We launched a full power black channel 3 years ago. Couldn't get any support from the community, and that was historic because it's the only full power black TV channel in the history of Texas. Then we actually went into broadcasting online. Turned out to be a coup for us, so we've been successful there for 3 years. This is a $3.9 billion spending group in Dallas that African Americans represent. So it's not like a racial thing, it's an economic thing. If you have a public service or any kind of industry you're trying to reach into a community, it's a lucrative opportunity to reach into that network of African American spending. We sat in a meeting with the chairman of Chrysler. He said that African Americans were not his target, but without them, they could not survive and profit. So in saying that $1.6 trillion nationwide is being spent, and we're in the process now of trying to reach into the black community as well as the regular corporate community for support for this newscast for every week and to expand out. If you look online, the Black Contemporary TV, you see we have a plethora of TV shows that represent everything that's positive about our community and to show that African-Americans aren't necessarily just liberal. We have two sides. We're conservative in some sense, and we're liberal in some sense. So there's a balance of opportunities to come in and reach into the community. The mayor sent us an email saying that he had asked Willis Johnson and some other people to help us and support us in our advertising efforts. We haven't got that yet either. So he identified the necessary plant that we represented, but we have yet to see any support. So if you got any kind of navigation money or if you want to reach into the community, you should look at what we're doing on Black Contemporary TV and address it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And Ms. Tolbert is going to get with you.
Okay.
All right, so get with Ms. Tolbert. She'll get with you so you all can discuss further. Madam Secretary.
Josh,
Council, we're going to get these speakers that are here so we can move forward for the rest of the day. Go ahead. Those that are present. Yes. Go ahead.
Josh Kogan.
Good morning, City Council. I wanted to briefly speak with you regarding LGBTQ youth homelessness. Many of you may recall the mayoral proclamation in April of 2017 in regards to LGBTQ youth homelessness. Since then, our city, and Dallas County at large, respectfully, has conducted its first robust street outreach and survey for youth experiencing homelessness ages 12 to 24 specifically. Working with the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, I was the project coordinator for this outreach effort, and we know as a result that approximately a quarter of our unaccompanied youth, that is literally homeless without any shelter whatsoever, ages 12 to 24, identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and or questioning, LGBTQ for short. This is approximately 50 youth. Under Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano's direction of the Mayor's LGBT Task Force, Outlast Youth was formed in 2016. We became a program of Promise House in 2017 and have now broken off as our own entity here in 2018. We are dedicated to seeing the reduction and prevention of LGBTQ youth homelessness in DFW at large. Whereas familial rejection is the leading cause of this issue, as indicated by a 2015 study by the Williams Institute, this is an issue that should continue to be addressed. In partnership with national organizations such as True Colors Fund and recently the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, Outlast Youth accomplishes our mission through LGBTQ cultural competency trainings for existing homeless service providers, cross-sector collaboration, and advocacy, which brings me before you today. John Loza, too, was a good friend of mine and mentor, actually was our board chair for Outlast Youth, so I know he would be proud to be speaking to you all today and come with you, to you with a heavy heart as well with this. And I know that LGBTQ youth homelessness was a main issue for John that he was dedicated to. And so I just wanted to, as June is LGBTQ Pride Month, it was just my simple desire to keep this issue at the forefront of each of your minds, and I gratefully thank you for all of your time. I am always more than happy to sit down with any of you to further speak about this matter, and you can find out more about our work at outlastyouth.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Charles Mann.
Good morning. Charles Mann, 4515 Live Oak, Old East Dallas. Dallas needs a raise. Let's stop thinking about running off poor people and start thinking about making them less poor. I was looking on the internet and I saw this fact sheet published by the National Equity Atlas. It's interesting. It shows... Let's see if I can make this work. Here we go. It shows that the city of Dallas is 51% majority renters, but they are burdened by rising rents and low wages. 48% pay too much for housing. Now, if Dallas renters paid only what they could afford for on housing, they would have an extra $620 million to spend in the community each year. Everyone would be better off, and racial iniquities would shrink. The article I got that from says, the headline says, if rent were affordable, the average household would save thousands of dollars a year. If renters paid just what they could afford in rent, the average Dallas household would have $5,500 a year more in their pocket to spend on groceries, child care, medical care, and education, things that 48% of Dallas households have been skimping on just to make rent. It goes on to say, when HUD's affordable housing programs get slashed, renters will stand to lose the most. But, on the other hand, if the government prioritizes ending the affordability crisis through greater, more targeted rental aid and incentives for affordable housing, construction, Black and Hispanic households could see the highest gains, but others would be better off too, mounting credence to the claim that higher racial parity makes cities richer. And what we really need to do is raise the minimum wage. An underappreciated way to solve America's job problem and rebuild the middle class is to turn the millions upon millions of low-wage jobs we actually have into better, higher-paying jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Madam Secretary.
Christian Gwynn.
Good morning. On April 16th, I was working at my job as a security officer when we discovered an unconscious man in the driver's seat of a car parked in security parking. After several unsuccessful attempts to wake him up, one of the other officers, Ed Cobb, called 911. Within minutes, two fire trucks and two DPD units arrived on the scene. A fireman from fire unit number 33 named Robert was able to wake him up. When the subject awoke, he had no recollection of who he is or where he was or how he got there. He was a little rude, but not violent or aggressive, but Fireman Robert pulled him out of the car and slammed him against my personal vehicle, breaking off my driver's side rear view mirror. From my and the other officer's point of view, that was unnecessary what the fireman did. I confronted him about it, and he told me to call risk management. He guaranteed the repairs would be paid for. So I took his advice and called, and they put investigator Edward Lee on the case. After 1 month of investigation, Mr. Lee sent me a letter stating the city is not liable for the damages. According to the city of Dallas, the only way they would be liable would be if the accident involved another city employee's vehicle and they were being reckless. But I believe there are several different ways people can be reckless, and one of them is reckless behavior while on duty with or without their vehicle. I had just gotten this car 2 months prior in February, and I've been constantly making payments every month, and I also have a part-time job with Lyft, so I'm not able to drive with this mirror broken off because it's a hazard, so I'm losing some income. So I am here to say that this is wrong, this is unlawful, and I would like to see something done about it. The repair would cost about $500. I ask that you would see a way to pay for these damages that were done by someone from our city. Let me leave you with this. Today it happened to me, but tomorrow it will happen to you. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Donnie
Mills.
We'll
get someone to look into it for you, okay? Sir, all right.
Donnie Mills.
Hello, everyone. My name is Donnie Mills. I find myself on the streets today because God wants to expose the horrific conditions the homeless have to go through. Shelters should teach people how to fish, not feed them a fish. And my goal in life is to build a shelter and fund it with my business. And maybe the people that come from the shelter could give back if they happen to have successful businesses. You know, I would build one that has mechanic shop, paint and body, plumbing, electrical, miscellaneous things to teach people. It is my belief that the homeless population could drop by 50%, perhaps more, if it wasn't for the conditions, because 97%, this is an estimate on my part, don't care about those people at the homeless shelters. And the first thing to getting the homeless off your streets is you got to have people in place that care about them. And the health department should shut down most of these places in operation. They are horrific. I mean, the conditions are just unspeakable. There is no way that anyone that cares about people would allow this to go on in their city. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam this Secretary. Concludes your open microphone speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda.
Okay.
Item 1 is approval of minutes of the June 6, 2018 City Council meeting.
Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Madam Secretary.
Agenda item 2, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we only have nominees for individual appointments. To the Community Development Commission, Alicia L. Lewis is being nominated by Councilmember Thomas. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Mary Ann Sparks is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. Ms. Sparks meets the 55-plus years of age special qualification. And to the Youth Commission, Jack Meningutti is being nominated by Councilmember Grayson.
Is there a motion? So moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you.
Mayor, your briefing continue.
All right. We're going to try to conclude. I wanted to take all the morning speakers so that we wouldn't have to deal with that as relate to after we conclude our briefings, so that when we conclude, then we can go to lunch and then we can go take care of the rest of the business that we have for today. All right. So now, with that being said, we'll go through the two briefings. We'll take our usual steps. So, Mr. City Manager, TC.
Thank you, Mayor. Your first briefing this morning is an update on the fiscal year 2019 and fiscal year 2020 biennial budget process. As you will recall, last August we presented our first biennial budget with a proposed budget for fiscal years 2018 and a planned budget for fiscal year 2019. You reviewed and amended the budget and adopted appropriations for fiscal year 2018 in September. Now we are rolling forward the fiscal year 2019 plan and adding fiscal year 2020. In August, we will present a new biennial budget to you. Like last year, we will be proposing an annual budget for the fiscal year 2019 and presenting a planned budget for the second year, fiscal year 2020. The fiscal year 2019 budget we propose will be very similar to the plan we represented last year, but we are fully reviewing the plan this summer and will make adjustments for changing revenue forecasts and new required expenses, such as school crossing guards and other such matters. You will then have the opportunity to review our recommendations, hold your various town hall meetings, make amendments if necessary, and adopt the first year of the two-year plan, which will only be fiscal year 2019. As you will recall, we are only able to adopt one year at a time, so in September, you will be asked to adopt only the fiscal year 2019 budget. Elizabeth Wright, Rach, Jack Ireland, and Jeanette Whedon will present the information to you this morning. I'll turn it over to Elizabeth.
Thank you, Mr. Broadnax. Good morning, everybody. Excited to be here in the summer when we're putting together the budget to present to you in August. And so this morning, we, as Mr. Broadnax said, wanted to provide you an update on process largely, but also some substantive pieces of information about the considerations that we are making for revenue changes, for the fees in our various enterprises, and for other expenses that we know we need to consider, to give you a preview of what we'll be thinking through the rest of this month and during the month of July as we put together the budget. So we will recap the budget that we have for 18 and 19, particularly that 19 year. We'll review those considerations that we'll be making before presenting to you a budget for fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20. And then, as Mr. Broadnax said, talk about next steps and then get your feedback. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Jeanette Whedon. She is our assistant director in the Office of Budget. Jeanette?
Good morning. On slides 4 through 9, I'll walk through a recap of the assumptions used to develop the city's first biennial budget for fiscal year 18 and 19. On slide number 4, the city manager recommended a balanced biennial budget for both fiscal years on August 8th of last year. Council made several amendments throughout the budget development process and adopted the first year appropriation on September 20th. The biennial budget is a two-year rolling budget. Fiscal year 19 plan budget now becomes the proposed budget, and this year's biennial will include fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20. The balanced biennial budget will be presented to Council on August 14th, and you will have an opportunity to review and adjust as necessary in the months of August and September. On slide number 5, the biennial budget presented in August was fiscally sustainable. Although Council adopted the first year of the biennial by law, the budget only included ongoing expenses that could be supported in the second year with forecasted revenue. Slide number 6 reflects the growth assumptions included in the biennial budget. As you know, the general fund budget is primarily supported by property tax revenue, 51%, and sales tax revenue at 24%. In August, the plan budget assumed property tax value growth of 7.22% and sales tax value growth of 3.5%. On the expenditure side, the plan budget for fiscal year 19 assumed increases for meet and confer, civilian merit, and the required contributions for the police and fire pension fund. Expense assumptions also include an 11% increase in employee benefits, a 17.5% increase in TIF payments, and master lease debt payment. The fiscal year 19 plan budget also includes funding for enhanced services on slide number 8. Funding was added to include one frontline and one peak EMS unit in Dallas Fire Rescue. An additional city attorney was added to handle the increased workload from the new intensive case resolution team created this year in co-compliance. The budget also included additional investment for major maintenance and street and alley improvements, $1 million for the compensation and classification, or actually $1 million for redesign of the city's compensation and classification system. Additional funding for a historic preservation survey, funding for the May election, as well as additional funding for O&M for three aquatic centers scheduled to come online this year. Those centers include the Samuel Grand Regional Family Aquatic Center, Fretz Regional Aquatic Center, as well as Crawford Regional Aquatic Center. On slide number 9, the enterprise fund assumptions used last August assume fee increases to recover the cost of services. And to recover the cost of services in Dallas Water Utilities, sanitation services, and storm drainage management. Those increases were designed to continue maintenance as well as funding for potential litigation. In sanitation services, the fee increase was assumed to cover personnel and health benefit related costs. And the fee increase in storm drainage was assumed to cover the capital improvement program. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jack Ireland.
Thank you. And I will continue moving from what we had planned last August to talk about some of the considerations that have come up since August or some of the things that we're looking at that may be changing that we need to consider as we prepare the budget over this summer and bring to you in August. So on slide 11, again, we've said this, we are pretty much staying the course with our fiscal year 19, but looking at our revenue assumptions, looking at expenses, looking to see if there's things that we are required that we did not include in fiscal year 19. So we will be making adjustments before we bring it to council in August. And fiscal year 20 will be our opportunity as we try to ensure that we remain sustainable going forward is with programmatic changes to ensure that we have revenue in fiscal year 20 that will cover those. Moving on to slide 12, just wanted to mention since last August, council held a retreat in February, and through that process, y'all identified several overarching initiatives. This page lists the top 10 of those. The full list is in the appendix. But this list are some things that you as a council identified that you wanted us to focus on as we put future budgets together. And so some of these things, for example, the comprehensive housing policy, that was something that has been brought to council and y'all adopted. And as we're developing next year's budget and fiscal year 20 budget, we will be looking at that housing policy to determine what we may need to do in the budget. Similarly, the strategy to reduce or eliminate aggressive panhandling. As you know, in April, y'all approved an action, and that is underway now, and so we will be looking at that to see how it's going to determine what our next steps are for funding additional efforts related to that. And the other things that are identified there are just the top 10 of what y'all identified in the February retreat that we will be reviewing as we put the budget together. Similar to receiving input from the City Council, we also received input from citizens. On May the 2nd, you received a briefing from ETC Institute on the community survey. We've been doing the community survey every other year for the last several. It was conducted again this year, as you'll remember. It was a random survey. It has a 95% confidence level with a 2.5% margin of error. The summary and conclusions are on the next couple of slides. We simply just picked out of the briefing that was done back in May and have restated those here for you to remind you. Again, the top priorities that were identified through the survey were infrastructure maintenance, police service, and code enforcement. And as we put the budget together, we will be considering those to determine how we address what citizens have identified as most important. For example, we have, as you know, the 2017 bond program. We have been increasing our commitment to pay-as-you-go for streets and alleys. We've been increasing our funding for pay-as-you-go for major maintenance of city facilities. So those are some of the types of things we're doing to address infrastructure maintenance. For police services, y'all have approved the meet and confer agreement. We are looking at ways that we can improve our retention of officers and recruit officers. We've added some things, as Ms. Whedon mentioned, for fiscal year 19 in the area of fire and rescue. So our public safety is an area that we keep trying to enhance. And in code enforcement in the current year, we added the intensive case resolution team, and we made changes in animal services, which had been in code, trying to improve those services. So we're trying to listen to the citizens and the feedback that we receive through the survey. Page 15 and page 16 show that information, again, just in a different format, where you see in the bottom right-hand corner on slide 15 what is considered highest importance with lowest satisfaction, and those are areas that we have the opportunity to try to make a big gain in addressing those areas. Same information is on slide 16, just in a different layout. On slide 17, in addition to our survey that we do every other year, we've been looking for ways that we can further engage the community. We have been doing an online survey since 2014. The reason we started that is because when we just have the three public hearings each year and citizens have to come down to City Hall to speak to council, we only have three or four citizens over the course of the year that show up. So we wanted to try to reach out to more people. And we've been successful engaging more people. This year we had 2,300 people that filled out the survey either online or when we went out to community meetings. So this information, which is laid out to some of the questions on page 18, it's not the same as the ETC survey, which was a sample, which is statistically valid. But this information on slide 18 is just more information that we're hearing from citizens of Dallas. We asked them how we should spend $100, and we gave them 12 services and said, how would you allocate the $100? And they said that they would put $43 towards police. They would put $25 towards fire and ambulance. They would put $7 in streets and alleys. And so they were just given the exercise of allocating $100 as a budget exercise. Similar, the next two boxes on the page, They were asked questions. If you wanted to add funds to one of the 12 services, what would you add funds to? But on the other side, if you had to take funds from a service, what would you be willing to decrease? And you see the types of response. Again, it's not statistically done, but it is information, the same as when you have citizens come down and speak before you at the council public hearings. So moving beyond input from citizens, one of the things that we had to update was our five-year forecast on sales tax and property tax. Sales tax accounts for 24% of the revenue for the general fund and property tax 51%. So between these two, you have 75% of all the revenues for the general fund. So it's important to do the best job we can at getting these right. In our research and our efforts, we believe that both nationally and regionally that the economy is continuing to grow, but it is slowing. And so we have updated our forecast on slide 20. You see our sales tax. You see what our forecasts were last July 2017, how we've updated those of June of 2018. So for fiscal year 19, our sales tax, we had forecast 3.5% growth. We've brought that down to 2.6% growth for next year. And then moving into the second year of the biennial that we will be working on, we reduced our forecast for sales tax from 3.2% to 2.5%. On slide 21, you will see the long history of sales tax. You will see how the percent changed from year to year. So the blue bars, if you will, are the actuals, how we have seen sales tax either grow or decline over time. And the five bars in gold or yellow to the far right are the 5 years forecast forward. The green bar is the average. Our average since 1985 is that we have about 3.2% growth in sales tax each year. So you can see looking back, there are years that we're above the average. There are years we're below the average. There's years that we've lost revenue. We expect going forward the next 5 years that there will be growth. We believe it's going to be coming down and will be a little bit below our average, our long-term average. Moving to property tax, you'll see, again, our forecast last summer, July of 2017, compared to June of 2018. On property tax, we are expecting to receive more property tax value, property base value. We expect to be growing. As y'all will recall, in May, everyone, property owners, received a statement from the appraisal districts about your value. Individual property owners are going through the process of appealing that. But we think on July 25th, we will see that growth of about 9% over the current year. Last year, we were thinking it was only going to be 7.2% growth. So we are expecting more growth in the tax base. We expect in our forecast to see it starting to come down in future years. On slide 23, the same as I showed you on sales tax, this is property tax. Our long-term average since 1985 is 3.4% growth per year. You'll see years that we are above our average, below our average, and years where the value actually decreased. The gold bars to the right, or yellow bars to the right, you'll see that we expect, again, it to tick up a little bit more from what we had in the current year to that 9% for next year, and then for it starting to not have as much growth. It'll still be growth. It just won't be at the same rate of growth that we've had over the last couple of years. So on slide 24, another thing as we are working on this budget that we're keeping an eye on and really working toward is bringing you on August the 14th a scenario that has reductions included. Based upon an effective tax rate, we would need to lower our revenues from $35 to $40 million, and we would have to identify expenses that would be associated with that to present to you. We will not know what the effective tax rate is until around August the 1st or 2nd, those first few days we get it from Dallas County. It's based on the certified tax rolls that aren't finished until July 25th. So it takes a little bit of time before we actually know what that number is. But it'll be in the magnitude of probably $35 to $40 million that it would be the difference if we adopted an effective tax rate or not. Slide 25, another thing that's such a significant part of our budget is our uniform personnel. As you know, there's been challenges related to the retention. We just are keeping our eye on that. You can see for police, we believe that we're going to be a little bit below where we thought we were going to end this year. We thought we were going to end this year with 3,094 officers. It looks like we're going to be about 50 short of that. We're continuing to see, at least in the current year, that we've lost more than we are hiring in. For fire, we think that we will be at the exact point that we thought we would be, which is 1,936 firefighters by the end of the year. We're hiring more this year than we see through attrition, losing through attrition. On slide 26, part of the uniform hiring and attrition, another factor is the compensation related to uniform personnel. As you may remember, back in the end of 2016, Council approved a three-year meet and confer agreement that had a plan of about $89 million of expenses that would grow over a three-and-a-half-year period, over a four-fiscal year period, related to pay increases. So we are looking at that, and that will be a factor as we go forward into fiscal year 19, because there's $23 million of that that will be added next year, and there'll be another $16 million of that $89 million that gets added in fiscal year 20. So that agreement that was put in place in 2016 continues to have costs that we're adding into the budget each year. Slide 27, some other things that we wanted to mention that we're considering and that we're looking at is just trying to make sure that we are aligning things where they need to be. And the school crossing guard program that was brought back from Dallas County Schools, where will that be housed? That will be moved into the marshal's office for next year along with city facility security. So we're just looking at changes like that to ensure that we are aligning the services where it makes sense. 73.6 of our general fund budget is pay and benefits and pension. And so that is something that we obviously will be looking at as we develop the fiscal year 20 budget. We've built in some things into the fiscal year 19 plan, but what are we going to do for fiscal year 20 to address compensation for civilian and uniform employees? What needs to happen related to benefits? Because we continue to see, as is seen nationally, increasing costs related to employee health benefits. And then also something that we're looking at is how to, are there opportunities to improve equity throughout the city and the way we allocate resources to address specific needs? And an example of this may be the housing policy. Are there areas where we need to target funding to address specific needs that were identified through that study? Rather than just spreading the money the same throughout the city, are there areas where we can improve equity by certain types of investments? On 28, a couple of initiatives that I want to mention are Fair Park and the Convention Center. As you know, we've been working on looking at those service delivery models and seeing if there's a different way of doing those businesses. And so here's an update on where we are on possibly outsourcing the management of Fair Park and of the Convention Center. Both of these are expected to not be in the August 14th recommendation, any change, because we will not know until after August the 14th what the recommendations are going to be, but it will be something that we will be looking at and what the impact might be on fiscal year 20. Slide 29, Jeanette mentioned these early on, our three enterprise funds that have fees that are charged to citizens, water, utility, sanitation, and stormwater. You'll see what we put in the fiscal year 19 plan budget, and if it's changed, it's struck through, and the new number is below it. So, for example, in the water utility, we thought that the water fees would need to go up for the typical residential customer by about $1.87 per month. We actually are going to be able to bring that down. As you'll recall, there was the Sabine River Authority litigation and the settlement on that, and Ms. Lowry has worked on the fees and been able to bring that fee down for fiscal year 19. In sanitation services, we expected to have about a 66 cent increase in monthly fees. It now looks like that's going to be about 70 cents for fiscal year 19. And then in stormwater, we are expecting the 32-cent increase, which is what we told you about last summer. Some of the reasons related to those fee changes are on slide 30. Again, for water utility, the settlement of the Sabine River Authority litigation has been the driver in changing that. Sanitation residential fee, it's primarily driven by their personnel cost and their fleet cost. Right now, they have not factored in some things that are in discussion into the fee, and so if they are included in the proposed budget, this fee would change. For example, there's been discussion of truck driver compensation. There's been discussion of having a community drop-off site. There's been discussion of alley vegetation abatement. If we put any of those expenses into sanitation's budget, they would need to recover by increasing their fee above what is currently laid out on the previous slide. And stormwater's fee increases are related to primarily to developing a pay-as-you-go capital program and doing some neighborhood drainage maintenance projects over the coming years, and that's the driver on their fee increases. So those are some of the types of things that we're considering that are above and beyond where we left you last August with the planned budget, and we will be looking at those through the summer, and Ms. Rachel will talk about the next part of the briefing.
Okay. Thank you. Anything you want to add, Mr. Manager? Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to start on page 14, which is so important, is our public safety and police services, and we see that's one of our top priorities of residents. And then look at page 25. And just so that I understand it, our current attrition is still outpacing hiring?
That is correct.
And that's of a deep concern for me. I really believe we don't have enough police officers out there. Crimes certainly increased in my district. Response times are still higher than where citizens want them to be, where we want them to be. I think in the priority one calls, what are response times right now this last quarter? We just brought it down to back under the 8 minutes.
The average response time for a, let me find it. It's a 365 measure. For a dispatched priority one call, as of the last quarter, the year-to-date actual was 9 minutes.
Year-to-date actual is 9 minutes.
Target is 8 minutes.
8 minutes. So we're still over on our response times. I know there's been a couple times for a short period of time we've gotten under the 8 minutes, but we're at 9 minutes. The other calls are pretty – what are they meeting their marks? Priority two, priority three? How fast do those go up?
I don't have those with me. We certainly can get those for you. The month of March was under the 8 minutes, as you said. It does vary by month, but the average for the year was nine.
Not. Target's eight. And I think the other priority two, priority three, priority four, you keep going up. You can get up into waiting on hours pretty quickly. And other parts are very important to Oak Cliff. And I know Southern Dallas, we just don't have enough traffic enforcement. We've got a real problem with high-speed racing and illegal street racing going on that touches all of our districts. And even police, these issues, which are huge quality of life issues, and not only that, we've had several fatalities and Oak Cliff because of it, as well as some people ending up in a coma is because of a lack of having enough enforcement. And I know traffic isn't where it used to be, our numbers. I know we're still missing don't have a fully up and running vice squad either. We've got a shortage of officers. There's not two ways about it. And one of the reasons that it's hard for everyone right now to attract officers throughout the country. But what makes it even more difficult in Dallas is the pay. Our pay is, how would you describe it, as competitive?
I would say starting pay is below the market at this point, although getting closer, and with certification pay, it certainly is closer. We pay more in certification pay than other local jurisdictions, so you can't just look at the base pay. However, for some of our higher level positions, we're right at market or even better than market.
For which positions do you, how long and how senior does one have to be to reach market?
I would like to ask for our public safety folks to address that question.
How would you describe entry pay for DPD? Do you consider it competitive or not competitive? And then low. Okay, entry pay is low. At what point do you think the pay becomes competitive?
Well, I think that is something we'll be looking at. Obviously, as we move into the meet and confer this year, we're going to be trying to approach the market for our competitor cities and see what we can, you know, see what that gap is and to be able to see how we can make that up, because I do think that that is a factor.
My understanding is it's an officer, it's only once we get to maybe officers approaching 20 years that it's at competitive. The officers much less, which are extremely valuable core of officers, those with that experience, or many of them are leaving now because of the pension situation. We're not able to retain them because of our pay. I don't think as a city we should wait for meet and confer. I would support in this next budget doing a 5% across the board raise for our officers. I certainly want you to take a look at that when you come back with your next budget, TC, what that would be and where we can find the money. I think we need a 5% increase. We are short on officers. Public safety is our primary responsibility. And just looking at the numbers up here, we're still not hiring to meet attrition. It's a big issue. We hear it in our districts about crime going up, and I'm just aware how difficult it is to be police officer just going from call to call. And this is something that's completely in our power here at the council to fix and looking at this next budget. So I would fully support a 5% raise across the board, even beyond meet and confer. Let's close this gap in pay. We know what we have isn't working. We don't need to wait around years and years to see if it's going to fix itself and just play hope. It's not going to fix itself. This situation is not getting any better. So I strongly support a 5% pay increase in this next budget across the board. I think it would be good for public safety, good for the city of Dallas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to say thank you for the detail. I know we're going to get very deep in the weeds over the next several months. But thanks for this. If you turn the page, 25. I'm a kind of pick up where my colleague left off. We had Trustee George Foreman to come and present at the Human and Social Needs Committee, and she talked about some things that are going on in DSD. And Councilman Griggs, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but not just DSD, but in Councilman Atkins' district, Carter High School is going to have a police and fire academy where we'll be able to have an opportunity to grow our own. I think it doesn't affect us right now, but over the long term, this is going to be great for our city, because we know that the young people that will attend this school will be from Dallas or the Dallas area, will have the city's best interests at heart, and they already have a desire to go into the field of public safety. So I wanted to make that point. Now, page 12, please. As I look at this list, and as I was up early this morning reviewing this briefing, I want to commend TC and the staff. As we look at this and we look at those that are priorities, and I went through and highlighted several, number 1, 2, 3, and 9 are either done or in the process of being completed. And how often have we sat down at our retreat, identified priorities, and been able to come back a few months later and say it's either done or in process? And so I think this is how it's supposed to be done. So I wanted to commend TC and your staff. on that. Council set these as priorities. I like the process how we took the dots and put the dots on those things and just kind of collected those and said, okay, as a council, these are the things that are priorities. So I wanted to point that out. Next page. Well, let me ask a question on this. On 4, develop and implement a 5-year infrastructure management program. What does that entail?
I'm looking for our assistant city manager.
As I can tell you briefly, okay, based on my discussions with the team, a couple of things that council asked for in the context of that was to look at our ongoing maintenance plan that is non-bond funded,
okay,
and really define and pave a path towards zero degradation and finding ways either through increased funding and or the request for increased funding to find ways to ensure that our, pavement index does not continue to go down. And so beyond that, additionally, to lay out, as we talked, a 5-year plan for what that and those maintenance dollars will do, mm-hmm, to augment and assist the bond program. And so we spend about $60 million annually on maintenance. So it's really a $300 million plan to show you by district what else we'll be doing beyond the bond program. So that is what staff is working on. I believe we'll be briefing the Mobility and Sustainability Committee, I think, in August on that specifically to lay out that plan.
Okay. So get a little bit more specific. We're talking about streets, alleys, sidewalks. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Page 24. And I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing where it talks about the calculation and the impact from the standpoint of, at this point, generally $35 million to $40 million less revenue. Tell me, explain how the budgeting development process would be different with an effective tax rate.
We're actually following the same process to develop a recommended budget. The city manager is still charged with providing a recommended budget to council, so we will do that. The effective tax rate scenario will simply be a scenario that would give the council a prioritized list of the cuts that we would make if we needed to live within an effective tax rate.
Okay. All right. And how would you define effective tax rate?
So an effective tax rate, I'm going to let Mr. Ireland explain that because I get mixed up sometimes on the definition.
No problem. So, as to the expert.
Yeah. So it would be a tax rate that would generate the same amount of revenue next year as we have this year, but it's on property that's taxed in both years.
Okay.
So growth related to new construction doesn't count towards the effective tax rate. It's just existing property in both years and how much revenue they generate.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Page 27. Mr. Mayor, I'm almost done. I'm looking where you said consider opportunities to improve equity throughout the city. You gave one example, but what would be some areas, other areas would be considered when you say improve equity throughout the city?
We're going to be looking at that issue and determining over the course of the next 2 months what that might look like. So, of course, the concept of equity is that you cannot evenly split the dollars necessarily. You need to be looking then at the outcome that we're trying to achieve across the city. And so we would be looking at that with any issues that might be out there. Are there places where an additional infusion of resources would help us achieve equity in a particular policy goal that the council has? So it really could be with a multitude of issues, and we would welcome input and feedback as we go through the summer and through the process as to what you all think that might need to look like.
You know, in my committee, we're looking at equity indicators, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to do a full council briefing on that so we can, as a council, can as a whole, see where we are in terms of equity. There's a difference in the definition of equity and equality, and it needs to be crystal clear in understanding. Yeah, equity doesn't mean giving everybody the same thing. It means making up for deficits. so everybody has an opportunity to be at the same point. So I personally am interested, and I know several members of my committee, Health and Caraway had talked about that, or Mayor Caraway today had talked about equity. And so I want to be a part of that conversation, and I encourage you to include some of my committee members. Last one, page 30. And when we're talking about sanitation, residential fees, it says personnel and fleet costs. Explain what you mean when you say fleet costs. I think I have an understanding, but I want to make sure.
So, of course, sanitation has a very large fleet of trucks and other vehicles that they use in residential collection and then, of course, in the rest of their operations. And so that fleet, is, like the fleet in the city, is aging. And so they are working through a capital plan to replace that fleet to make sure that that it is going to be effective for the operation. In the meantime, maintaining an older fleet is costly, and so there are expenses with that. And we're working to optimize that. And, of course, as you all know, we have a fleet study that is looking at the entire fleet operations within the city and every department. And so that will help inform what that looks like going forward. But it's just the fact of running a large, complex fleet like that, that it does cost a lot to maintain, and those costs go up. Yeah. Well, and we do. If you have additional questions, we have Kelly High from Sanitation.
No, that's fine. That's what I wanted to get clarification. I wanted to make sure that was the case, because when we talk about fee increases, the more information that you can, you know, arm us with when we go out and have the budget town hall meeting, I think the residents of the city of Dallas will understand it if we explain the why, as opposed to just say, just because I said so, as we used to tell our children, just because I said so. But if we explain the reason this fee is increasing is because we have to maintain, you know, you don't like how trucks are blowing black smoke as they're driving through the neighborhood, so we want to be able to maintain. They say, oh, okay, I understand, and I appreciate you giving us that understanding. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to follow up on Mr. Thomas's comment on the equity issue, because I saw that as well. So is this slide coming in because of the work that Teresa O'Donnell did on the resiliency? Is that how this is? I guess what I'm trying to figure out, where did this is new and this is great. Where did it come from?
Well, one of the four E's that the city manager has introduced in terms of core values in the city is equity. And so we're working to incorporate the concepts of equity in all of our work. And so we wanted to make sure that we also considered it as part of the budget process this year.
Yeah. So I guess while I'm asking, I think that's fantastic. I'm absolutely supportive of anything that cures past wrongs. What I want to make sure of, though, is, you know, there's a comment made, and I understood what the comment is made about, you know, spreading things equally, because Lord knows to accommodate us, it's just give everybody equal and get them out of our hair. I don't do that, or Jennifer doesn't do that, but everybody else does. But anyway, like I know that, you know, like street rating, right? You know, street ratings aren't equal for everyone because more effort was given towards other communities. But yet I know it was mentioned that, okay, well, we're going to try to balance that out in the general fund, and that was part of the thought process on the bond. So I'm trying to match up how we're going to achieve the overarching goal of equity versus understanding that you know, neighborhoods all through the city have issues with services. I don't know how to articulate that better. Sorry.
Absolutely. Our role and our job is to make a recommendation that will help achieve the goals throughout the city. And so, as you mentioned with streets, there are some districts, for instance, that just have more lane miles. And maybe those lane miles were not, in the schedule most recently. So it may be that, in terms of street funding, you would seek to have zero degradation ultimately is the goal, and so you might seek to target some resources to a particular area for that reason. So there are a lot of things we look at. What I can assure you is that our motto remains, services are our priority, that we are a service-first organization, and so that includes the entire city, and that includes making sure that we're not ignoring any one area. So there is, to some extent, the desire and the need to spread, of course, all of the services that we provide throughout the city. But where we know we can move the needle on a particular area and achieve some equity, I think it's important for us to take a look at that and determine where we can infuse those resources that will help us get to that ultimate goal of equity.
Sure.
But it is not negate the need to
sure.
address things throughout the city.
I would just say the one thing I'd really encourage is I don't think we have a great sense of data to know how to do that. I don't think we've traditionally shown the ability to do that. For example, you know, one of the things that DISD does a lot better job of than we do is when they do their facilities management and they close schools, because they know where kids are and where kids aren't. We don't know that. What we end up doing, and I get it, I do it too, and I understand, is we throw money and say, you know, an area is blighted or an area is in need, and we're going to throw money at it, and it's guilt money for all the sins that we've done in the past. And what I want to make sure that we do is apply metrics that, quite frankly, we don't have today. We have an MBA that talks about housing stock, but that's housing stock, and there's a big difference between what you can do, say, on the housing market and putting in sidewalk. And I just – what I'm afraid of is I'm absolutely in support, but I would really encourage you over the next 2 months that what's going to end up happening, I'm afraid, is you're going to end up trying to do this, and then folks are going to get upset because areas are ignored because we perceive what a problem is, and instead of using metrics, we kind of use the heat map of hot air of whoever just bellows loud enough to make sure, you know, something gets done. So I would just really encourage you over the next couple months before we go into this to really figure out what that metric is of how we define that. I guess that's what my point was.
Two things, if I may, on that. So the MVA is a good start. There are many data layers that can lay on top of that. And we have worked to take a data-driven approach and believe that we need to gather more data and do more in that area of making sure that we have the data to inform our decisions. So I think you make a very fair point there. The second thing I would say is that in the community survey that the ETC Institute did, there are statistically valid results at the district level, which we have provided to everybody, the district results, in terms of the community perception by district. So in taking a look at those as well, it might help us to understand throughout the city, at least the individual district community perception of the city services and what's happening there. So that may be an interesting thing for all of us to take a look at as well over the summer.
Okay. Councilman, and let me just add on to that. I think your perspective is right on. And I think I've asked Jack and their team, and not quite sure we're going to be able to get to 100% of that review this year, of really looking at our budget through an equity lens and using the tool that some other cities do, which is an equity toolkit of sort, to really analyze whether it's new proposals, existing policies and programs within budget parameters in some cases, and not always, sometimes it's just operational, to be able to define and share with council the specific impacts of either doing something and or not doing it, and who might be receiving disparate treatment because of what we may choose to do one way or another. I'd say as an organization, I think between the resilience plan and the equity indicators that was presented to the committee, one, I would recommend that we present that to the full council as requested, as well as have the council, if in fact you feel inclined, to accept those formally, that would then give us as the team the opportunity to figure out how we're going to operationalize some of the recommendations and or work with the various partners, you mentioned DISD and others, to really begin the equity journey of understanding what it means, defining what it looks like, and then being able to come up with recommendations both inside and externally on how we bring about more equity and or get other people to begin to look at things through an equity lens. And so, again, I think those things are important. We'll incorporate some of that in the budget, but some of it is not about budget. It's really about how we approach doing what we do because, as Elizabeth said, we've got to do a lot of things in this city. Some we got to do more in certain areas. And so I'll give the example, and she talked about the MBA. When we laid out the areas of focus, the three targeted areas, we left out some areas and talked through work we'd need to do in those specific communities to begin to bring those areas up to a standard where investment could be possible. And a lot of those things were services that we provide throughout the city, but in some areas you need a little bit more because of some of the demographics and the issues there. And so it would be a challenge of us as staff to figure out, okay, so what does that mean for those communities? We can't just keep doing what we're doing all over because it's not obviously working.
So we've got to maybe look at some programmatic or initiatives to really figure out how we deal with addressing code enforcement, crime, and other things in those areas. So that may be a equity opportunity to say you do need a little bit more because of the conditions of your area.
And I think that's great, and I really appreciate your response on that, because I want to see that be successful, because what I don't want to have happen is when we come back, you know, whether it's in Adam's district or Jennifer's district or Five Points or in mine, where we have a Burmese population, you know, sometimes we get into north, south, east, west, and there's needs all through the city. And so as we're going through that from a data-driven standpoint of where are those pockets of areas where it may be surrounded by wealth, but then you have this one pocket that's awful, I think sometimes that pocket gets lumped into to wealth, for example, and we don't know. So the more you're doing that, I'm absolutely supportive.
And that will be the key. But I will just say this, I've always said. We've got the plans. We've laid out the data. The key is who's working the plan and who's working with people to help work the plan. And so we'll be looking at how we're going to address equity internally and who's going to do that work day in and day out. So it's not just we hope somebody's doing it, but just organically.
I think that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's go to 17. The value of this data is low, these data. Here's how our system works. Every 2 years, a percentage of people who give a rat's ass show up and vote for us. We talk to them constantly, all the time. We try to encourage new people to give a rat's ass and come vote for us. But frankly, going out and conducting a statistically significant survey of people we've never met is not compelling. And I certainly don't mind that you all gather this data and look at it and share it with us so that we can understand what you're seeing. But when management tells elected officials what public opinion is, it's just the funniest thing ever. It's just a laugh line every time. Our butts are on the line if we get public opinion wrong. Yours are really not. You're insulated at least by one layer. And so I find this stuff humorous, and I would encourage you not to waste too much of your valuable time gathering it or analyzing it. I just, it's our job, and I don't particularly like my toes being stepped on, which I'm sure you all have learned. The thing I see in this budget briefing that I think will improve as we go forward, and maybe it needs to start out this general, the thing that I see is a lack of explicit tie to the explicit policies that the council has set forth. And so, for instance, Mr. Clayton mentioned the resilience policy, which we haven't formally adopted. I get that. I will be interested in seeing how the budget interrelates with the recommendations of the Poverty Task Force, for instance. Now, it is incumbent on us, the policymakers, and on the Poverty Task Force, and on the Human and Social Needs Committee, and on the Economic Development Committee, and all of us, to be explicit. So, for instance, the resilience plan in its current form takes a look at climate change, which is not necessarily a resilience topic, but its recommendation for climate change is to continue to work with environmental advocacy groups. That is not explicit enough for management to make any real decisions about how budget ought to operate. And so I will be encouraging us and trying to bring forward more explicit recommendations so that and I would love to hear explicit recommendations from management in its professional opinion about how we implement those plans. The budget is an expression of our values, and I very much appreciate the idea that we're going to look at things through an equity lens. I think that's what the best practice is in city management right now. That's very It's going to be key, but here again, in City Hall, we continue to get inside our own heads about planning. So here's an equity lens. How many neighborhoods don't have storm drains? I can think it's 5 or 6, just like off the top of my head. How much do storm drains cost? We know that by the linear foot. Multiply that out. There's a budget line item that I think we would vote for all day long. How much does street lighting cost? How many neighborhoods don't have street lights? It's kind of a simple multiplication. Instead of doing this long-term planning process, don't we know what are some of the basic needs that all of our neighborhoods have that are just not being met? When Mr. Thomas is talking about rectifying deficiencies in the way that the city has treated neighborhoods, some of these are pretty simple questions and answers. And I don't know that we need a statistically valid sample or a bunch of MPAs to tell us that people would like to walk on sidewalks instead of in the mud. That one's fairly simple, and we know the neighborhoods where there aren't any sidewalks. So I have enjoyed the budget process much more than I have in the past. And if I sound frustrated, I don't mean to be. What I mean to communicate is that I am anxious to see more detail, and I am looking forward to working with you sooner rather than later on getting these specifics planned out. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you. Mr. Atkins, will you turn to page 7? Increase for ongoing expense such as TIF payment and master lease debt costs. Explain that.
The TIF payment is actually the amount that the city is required to pay as a result of entering into a TIF agreement. So in the current fiscal year budget, we assumed $41.8 million, and that cost is going to increase based on our assumptions of the increase in value up to $49.2 million. For master lease debt, master lease our equipment, so we'll pay for it and then lease the equipment over a 4 or 5 year period. And so that's a cost that's assumed.
So would you show that in a line item, how much it's going to be? I see this is just general, but I would love to see in a line item.
You can actually see the detail for master lease as well as the TIF payment in the current budget document. Okay. So if you look online within non-departmental, there are separate line items for both of those costs.
Okay. Page 12. The plan when we have a retreat, and I'm just looking at the housing policy and the economic development policy plan. Are we looking at the housing policy and the economic development policies that we've been to get started on? Are we working that together so we understand that what our approach is going to be? And do we have the department and the housing economic development is working? We already established a housing policy. Now we're trying to do an economic development policy, how we coordinate that. I know we just hired a consultant to help with economic development policy, and we got a task force with a housing policy. How do all these people working together that we make sure that our economic development policies will be on the same side of the housing policy?
So for the budget process, we're certainly working very closely with our Chief of Economic Development, Raquel Favela, who is working with, of course, all of those departments, and pulling together that information and making the recommendations that we're discussing with the city manager.
Okay, I understand that, but how are they going to coordinate back to us? Because we do have a housing policy, now we're working on economic development policy. So those are the one of the top two things that we're trying to get to. And so what my concern is, how are we going to coordinate that and make sure the council is up to date as we coordinate this?
So I think that we'll, in the regular order, be working with council members and also through committees. And what I would say in terms of the budget process is that we are going to do a separate presentation by each strategic priority. So on Wednesday, the 15th of August, we will have a dedicated presentation to that economic development strategic priority and talk about those issues in depth.
And then each of these six committees for the last meeting, the second meeting in August, will consider the budget for that strategic priority and any amendments that council members may want to make. And so that is one thing that is part of the process this year that we should spend, if you don't mind, a couple of seconds talking about, is that the committees will be looking at amendments. Council members will bring amendments to the committees. And then when we get to our meeting in late August, where we talk about amendments, we'll be asking for committee chairs to report out on the amendments that their committees considered and the disposition of those amendments so that the full council can discuss and consider those as well and potentially take straw votes that we would then incorporate into the ordinance for first reading.
Okay, on page 27. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, also Mr. Clayton, to bring this up. Equity. I hear the city manager said it's not just about money, it's also about neighborhoods. So I'm trying to see how do we define equity in the tale of the two cities. You know, when policy has been done for so many years, and now we got new policies coming down now, and so the policymakers. So with equity, how do we, as a community, instead of like a certain sidewalks, I got bar ditches, I got streets, and other part of the city do not have that. The other part of the city is that I do have affordable houses, but I need more affordable houses, but I cannot get affordable houses. So is equity determined by staff? Equity is determined by the council, or equity is determined by the community. So who determines who got less equity and who make that final decision?
I think ultimately council makes the final decision.
Okay. Thank you. So is council make that final decision? And how do we say that, how do we budget that? You know, and we got 14 different districts, and do I take equity from Jennifer Gates district and put in District 8? Do I take from Santa Grace district and put in District 8? How do we do it? I mean, we got to have some kind of definition to how do we do it. I mean, what pot do we take it from in order to make the city grow? I don't understand that. How do we do it? You said the council, we are the policy makers, it's our decision, but how do the city manager take that role and how do we spread the equity around? But we're talking about it, but how do we do it? You know, how do we get it done, and how do we do it on a timeline? You know, we're talking about MBA, we're talking about the plan, we're talking about all this. I mean, it sounds great, but when you go to the citizen, he said, I need more equity here, but how do I get to that? I mean, how do I get it? I mean, how do we do it?
So, Councilman, you kind of amen to the first question. An answer, and that was it's a council decision. And then you immediately asked how the city manager was supposed to do that.
Because we don't do your job. That's your job.
That's fine. But we like the first answer very well. And so I'm going to explain how that would probably work. And so to some extent, I think the city proper, as well as the organization, and maybe this council, we've got to spend some time as staff and really as these questions continue to come up about equity, really help understand equity beyond a one-sentence definition and the inner workings of it and how it relates to policy and to decision-making. So I would say how it gets incorporated is through one of the first documents you've already adopted, and that was the Comprehensive Housing Plan, which took a real wide view of housing in this community and some underlying factors, and then found ways through a metric-oriented way to show you where there was inequities and certain types of markets that were different. I think when we move forward with the other policies that we'll want you to look at, obviously in strategies like economic development, they will be layered on top of things like the MBA, but will also show and reflect where economic development is happening, and then get this council's guidance and thoughts on where we need more of it, where it would benefit, and how that ties into the overall economic situation in this city. So that will be another layer. As we lay out a mobility plan and begin to look at the deficiencies in transportation modes and or access to those things, those will continue feed into where we're not having the same types of active and responsive transportation systems, which will then, again, voice the concerns about where we need to do more at. And I think through those types of efforts from council, from a policy perspective of saying, staff, here's the landscape, here is what we're saying we are lacking, here's what we need, now figure out how you finance and budget that. Those documents in and of themselves will help us get there if, in fact, we have an equity lens throughout the conversation while we're developing the policies. And so, as Councilmember Kingston indicated, some of it is pretty simple. We know where stuff isn't and where it is and where there's more of it and not. I think the issue and challenge for this council and staff will be we've known that. We know it. It's about the financial wherewithal for us to be able to get at it. I can tell you we've got a needs inventory of $10 billion for infrastructure, and it will probably show you right where that infrastructure needs to be. And the issue is I ain't got $10 billion, and so we got to get it as we do with five-year increments. But, again, the discussion happened, and there was a lot of concern, and we tried to do our best. But there's 14 council districts, and everybody kind of got almost about the same amount of money. And we infused a little bit of equity in that when it came to the street conditions. But that's a big task. So the bottom line is you do it through policies. You do it through efforts and documents that take into account all the things that affect the city. And then staff's got to work those plans. But I would strongly recommend that we spend more time with council really talking about what equity is and showing it. And I think the equity indicators did that. But it's about what do we do and how can we, in the same breath, we want to do a lot of great things, whether public safety or other kinds of programmatic efforts. We recognize those are have-tos, and we got to figure out how we allocate the resources on the things that we should be doing over and above to right the wrongs, if you want to say that, or to provide the opportunity for everybody in this community to succeed. So it's a council decision. I think you do it one document at a time and one policy at a time, and we as staff are here to support that and bring you best practices and recommendations on how you improve upon areas of weakness in this city and the gaps that we have.
Okay, with that, with public safety, my concern is number one, especially in my District 8, you know, the response time, you know, I got very bad response time in District 8, and also is the nutrition, the pay scales. You know, we got a great education, you know, for the police to go into the first year, the first 2 or 3 years, but when they do go through all their training, they end up leaving, going somewhere else. So can you tell us how do we do a better job, increase pay? I hear Scott Gray said let's do it, you know, across the board, you know, but also what about a young officer? I mean, those are the ones we're losing. So is there a solution? How do we keep the young police officer once they go through the training?
I'd like to ask John Fortune, our assistant city manager over public safety, to address your question.
Yeah, I'm John Fortune, assistant city manager. That is a great question, and it's something that we have been discussing and working on for the better part of the last 18 months. Retaining our officers is a priority. We have implemented a number of programs to try to improve within the department, the culture, whether it's policies that the chief has changed to try to make it more attractive for the officers to stay, but also in focused our time and energy on recruitment. As you know, and you can see here, we're certainly not where we had hoped to be. We started the year a little lower than what we had anticipated, but we certainly have put a lot of energy and effort to invest in recruitment. I believe that we're at a point where we will start seeing some benefits or fruits from those efforts. But as has been discussed here, pay is clearly one of those areas that we believe would continue to help us with our department be attractive for other individuals to come here and work and stay here as well.
And I see, you know, what the problem is, but then, too, I would love to us over the holidays on our vacation to come up with a number. What is the cost of that going to be to try to do that? And where the money going to come from? You know, it's also about the dollars. And number one, we got to make sure this is our problem. And how do we solve the problem? I mean, you know, my citizen in District 8, I know in case of we side by side in an apartment, our crime is going, you know, it's please scare. You know, I call you all the time and Chief Hall that the citizens deserve better. And I just need to find out how we pay for it and a timeline on it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, very much. I want to start with police recruitment because I believe that is probably our most critical issue right now. We've kind of weathered the storm and have come through a lot of the other challenges now, but I really think that this is the highest priority and really always should be since public safety is really paramount in our districts. Is the academy full at this time or at capacity to train as many officers as possible, John? Or
Hi, Angela Shaw, Assistant Chief, Dallas Police Department. Currently, we do have three academy classes going right now. Our next class is slated to begin in July. Currently, we have 112 rookies in the academy.
Now, is that at capacity, those three classes at 112?
Well, I think that every class, we could always use more recruits in the class, but that is what we have.
Let me ask a question the other way. Will it hold 120, 150, 140?
Yes, so we typically can have more classes going. We typically have between three and four classes going at one time. It just depends on the start times and ending. We would like to ideally have 50 recruits in every class. However, we have not reached those goals.
I just want to make sure we weren't at a choke point. Where
no,
we just
sir, we're not.
Couldn't push them through the academy.
No, sir.
So
you bring
them,
we can hire them.
We need extra resources there, and then we wanted to consider
yes,
that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, recruitment goals obviously are not being met. Could you tell us basically what you think the largest challenge to doing that is? Is it pay or is it something else?
Well, pay is a big struggle for us. I'm not going to lie about that. It's hard to compete with our area agencies when we don't have the same benefits and pay to offer.
All right. Thank you very much for those comments. Well, I too agree that at this point we just don't have enough officers. We've been able to get by with overtime, and I think we've done a yeoman's job of doing that, but now I think it's clear that we don't have enough because of the response time indicators, and obviously in my district as well as others, particularly in southern Dallas, you know, our crime rate is going up and violent crime rate, too. Some of it's very, very appalling. It seems like lately from John, I'm getting just every weekend, it's just kind of some challenging responses that we have not had really probably since my first year in 2013. Street racing, also to echo comments by Mr. Griggs, you know, that's a big challenge, but I think the DPD has met that challenge. I know we've had a number of arrests, and there's been illegal handguns and, you know, drug paraphernalia and drugs itself confiscated, so I think they're doing a really magnificent job with the task force there, but that is still a problem, and it's particularly on your Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. I'm really am looking forward to the Vice Squad coming back ASAP. We know that we have known drug houses in District 5 and Southeast Dallas. We can go get them, but we got to have people to go get them. We've got to have people to make those buys, and I think it's real evident that there's been a lack of focus in that given area, and so those problems persist because we just haven't had the bodies to go in and do the work. So I'm would be happy to see them come back soon, and I understand they are coming back quickly. Also, I'm glad that we're beginning the discussions, you know, early on meet and confer. I think it's important to get out in front of this. Also believe, like some of my colleagues have stated, that we do need to increase the pay quickly. Again, we've moved through a lot of these other challenges that we've had, and those were high priorities. But now that we've got those things fixed, I don't really see any impediments towards doing that except for simply finding the money. And we've got to find the money, even if we have to pull back on some of the other services that we've got to be able to get there. So, again, now that we've passed the bond campaign and we've dealt with the pay referendum lawsuits, and also we've made pension fixes and so forth, we've got to get to the pay matter. So those are the things that I want to work on. So I just want to get this done. Really, no excuses, no delays. If there's any possible way to get that done sooner rather than later, if you'll go to slide 12, I'll try to be quick about the rest of this. Manager or someone on speaking, manager, if I can have your attention. I see what the surveys have been and what we've talked at our council retreat, but I'm really concerned that we don't really have anything here at all to combat, you know, litter, trash, illegal dumping, bandit signs, tires being dumped, and so forth. We sometimes say that, well, we need more code enforcement and more code compliance. That's true, but I wanted to delineate these exact issues that I'm having, which are really challenging for my district. You know, people come from outside the city and just start strolling tires. We were out on a drive yesterday in the district, and just on one street, there's like seven tires just out in the middle of the road that we're having to kind of weave around like an obstacle course to get down the street. And this is not an anomaly. It's epidemic in my area. I don't care if it's Sine Road or if it's over by Spruce High School. I don't care where you go. It's there. And I know it's in District 8 adjacent to me in District 7. So I would like to develop, you know, constructive measures to better regulate or eliminate also these clothing bans. And Tammy Palomino, I know, has put some energy into that, and I look forward to finding a ways to deal with that. I think we're just going to have to go to property owners and eliminate these collection boxes or find a way to eliminate them. And we may have to go door to door, you know, shopping center by shopping center, but everywhere I've got a clothing collection box, those are just huge challenges. And while we want to give clothes to the needy, we can do that through our shelters or through Goodwill or through the Salvation Army, Souls Harbor, other charities that we can distribute those. But these things ended up being overfilled, and then there's big piles around them. Then the clothes get wet, and then it's, people, and they're just pulling them and distributing them all over the parking lot. So that's a big challenge.
So Mr. Callahan, let me hold you right now for a minute. I'll give you first for your second round.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't see in the briefing where do you see that we're going to any increases in technology? Are we budgeting anything, or did we put that in the budget? Technology improvements, because I think they can be utilized across the board in all departments to help with efficiencies. Particularly, I've had conversations with Chief Hall related to a DPD being able to do online reporting of activities, to be able to, you know, help with staffing, to be able to fight crime and other mechanisms. So
we're currently working with our IT department to put together a five-year forecast of the technology expenses that we need to make. There are some, of course, that are just basic infrastructure expenses that we'll need to make no matter what. And then, of course, there are new technologies that either council has already awarded contracts to implement has asked us to take a look at. And so looking at where that needs to happen over the next 5 years in terms of the capacity of the city to implement a lot of new technology can't be done overnight, and, of course, the funding stream that we'll use. So we're definitely looking at technology. I agree with you that there is quite a bit that we need to be doing. And there are certainly things that I care deeply about that are kind of back office types of technologies that we need, and we'll be looking at those. But I think the ones that you all care most about are things that we are implementing, such as our new 311 system right now. And then, of course, other public-facing apps that we're implementing or IT solutions. The plan review, electronic plan review, is one that we have in this final budget that we're currently operating in and looking at that. So in the budget, as we roll it forward, we'll look at what additional resources, if any, do we need to continue to implement that electronic plan review or include additional phases. So those are certainly considerations we have. In the budget, we need to be looking at what's citizen-centric and how can citizens have the, most of their questions and most of their business done in as few contacts with the city as possible and as easily as possible. So that's certainly part of our planning.
All right. I just think I agree the things that we're doing forward-facing with our residents is great, that access on 311, but I do think looking at ways to do things in back office more efficiently will help save costs in the long run. So when we look at this budget, I think we've all talked about this wanting to try to strategize on the way that we could help with recruitment and officers, and if that's increasing pay at all over, or starting with trying to figure out a better way that to for new officers, because I think we've all I think we've heard that today, is that our officers, I think 0 to 7 years is what I thought is what Chief Hall had expressed to me, are not market. So I would like that information, exactly where we fall out of market, and if we try to put more money in this budget, that we do it, you know, at those areas that we're, or even when we start talking about meet and confer, that we try to figure out where we're out of market. And then, you know, because, I mean, with the attrition, it is a concern, and we all need to figure out ways to address it. At the same time, I think that or Mr. Griggs' proposal is very expensive, and then we got to say, well, okay, what city services are we willing to cut? Because we cannot keep the tax burden increasing on our residents. I mean, we hear that. We talk about affordable housing. When I'm out there talking with those on seniors and other people on fixed incomes, they're getting taxed out of their homes. We're creating the affordability issue because of the taxes. So, you know, if we want to put things in the budget, we got to figure out where's the budget ways that we can cut. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about effects of tax rate when we get to Mr. Kleinman. But I'm sensitive to that. I hear that from my residents, and particularly where they're rising at a rapid rate on the west side of my district, where there were affordable homes you could get in for $250,000 at one point, and now it's $500,000 to get into these homes. So, and then the tax burden is too great. I think when we talk about equity, and there's a lot of discussions around the horseshoe about equity and at city council, I think if we can improve the socioeconomic conditions in the city, and that's kind of across the board, and that's really giving everybody equal opportunities, improving education, job skills, then that's when we're actually going to see that kind of equity that's going to help everybody throughout our city, and that rising tide is going to lift all boats. I know that phrase is used frequently, but I think if, you know, we see that improvement throughout the city, it's going to help the northern portion of the city, which has 85% of the tax burden now. If we can, you know, improve socioeconomic conditions throughout our entire city, and everybody's values are improving, then it is going to be a benefit to the entire city. So I commend you, city manager, for trying to move in that direction. But at the same time, I get where we want to all have, you know, good streets and great sidewalks and, you know, access to parks and rec centers, and we have to, you know, evaluate that at the same time. But I think there is an importance that we try to work together so all socioeconomic conditions will rise and we'll have less burdens on our public safety, and we could be addressing things, you know, more holistic. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. One kind of just quick question for city manager. I notice we're getting a lot of these paper briefings now. Is there a way to opt out of the tree killing so I don't have to get one of these if you guys posted it all the time? Thank you.
Anybody else
want to? No paper?
No paper.
Electronic, everything. You mean no paper.
We will default to all electronic.
No, with me.
If somebody individually asked for it, great.
Give me my paper. Okay, thank you. Okay, page 24. I'm gravely disappointed that this shows up on page 24. You guys not only have a directive from the council, but you have an FMPC that says start with the effective tax rate budget. And y'all bury it. I mean, I'm surprised it. I mean, maybe it should have been page appendix 24. I mean, really burying this thing. And as much as everybody wants to improve our city and sees the needs in so many areas and is advocating for their own personal little issues, or some of them are more global issues like public safety, we need to address that. But, I mean, really, guys, I mean, this slide is just, I mean, like, let me ask you the second bullet. The effective tax rate will generate $35 to $40 million less revenue than in FY19. So you're already calling for a budget cut on a budget we haven't even adopted? $35 to $40 million less than in this year's budget?
Than in the planned year that we presented last year that would carry forward everything you adopted for this year.
I don't think you guys understand the gravity of presenting to the council that you're going to raise taxes so much that you're going to create a budget cut. I mean, even with $35 to $40 million less, you're actually increasing the total budget, correct? From this year to next year.
From new property on the rolls, yes.
Yeah, so it's not a budget cut. The idea of the effective tax rate is show us where you're increasing from this year's budget. Not take the pain of we're going to cut this and cut this and cut this because we don't have this to cut. It's a future. So what we'd like to see, what I'd like to see, and maybe I'm just the one of 15, okay, so two of 50, I don't know. What I'd like to see is what's our budget this year, you know, add it, and then to maintain that budget, especially based on all these obligations we have, because we have a lot of obligations that are going to go up no matter what. We've got debt service, I assume, going up. You know, we've got meet and confers going up. We have all these obligations. We have raises. Okay, so what's going to happen if we were just to say we're only going to tax our people the same? But it just drives me nuts, this assumption that we're going to have this huge windfall of tax dollars year in and year out, and we are going to max it out. And I'm just really disappointed that, I mean, staff just doesn't even take this FMTC seriously at all. They're just like, oh, here's where you're going to do all this great stuff, and if you guys want to just help the taxpayer a little bit, you're going to have to cut the budget. There's no budget to cut because you haven't presented a budget yet. So let's look at an effective tax rate budget like we asked to start with. How bad does it look? And then council members can advocate for enhancements to that budget, and we can figure out what the tax rate is going to be. It's so inside out right now. It's so assumptive and presumptive that I just can't help but complain, and I'm sorry. Thanks.
Thank you,
Mr. McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. let me first, Mr. Broadnax, where are we on hiring a chief of innovation?
The position advertisement, I think, closed the end of May. I think the interviewing and narrowing down process is currently underway. I think there's a hold on my calendar, I believe, for July 20th, July 18th and 20th to meet with the potential top few candidates. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Okay, I appreciate the update. One of my concerns is that, as Councilmember Gates mentioned, I think there's a lot of opportunity for savings and efficiencies through innovation and technology, and I think we don't have money in this budget for that. We're not looking at those areas. I was sitting down with a group from our libraries yesterday, and they talked about how we're still having to move one book at a time with our manual labor and not using available technology. And those are, I guess, budget items that should be included, I believe, in advancing some of these things, and I just don't see it. So there's some of those items that I think are no-brainers that I don't see it yet. And I think there's other areas mentioned, whether it's in public safety or other, that we kind of hope it comes along at some point in time, but it's not built in. And am I off base, or is there a response right now? I see you nodding, but.
Well, you're not off base. There is a great ability for us to improve our technology to drive efficiency. I think you will see some of that in the proposed budget. I think as a matter of course and conversations that I think I have quite often during a lot of things with budget, those are the questions I'm asking, and I'm getting responses to what we have not done historically and just the level of investment we've made and or just the
timing of some of these things, and they're in the works. And I think hopefully council will see more of those technological things coming forward as we begin to try to make that shift. And so I think you'll see a little bit of that in this current budget. Didn't see much last year other than I think there were some things in the pipeline that were approved. I think the issue is just getting them online. And the 18-month, two-year cycles are kind of frustrating, I think, to council members, obviously, because that's, in some cases, your whole term. And if you've raised it, it doesn't happen as fast. But we're working and looking at that. We're actually asked the team to really begin to lay out a five-year window and plan for technology and what that spend looks like so we can make those decisions at not in the moment, but really look at where we're headed for the next 5 years from a spend perspective and budget those things. So you're right on with that question.
Well, I appreciate the response. It has been frustrating for a while, and that was why 2 years ago I advocated strongly for the chief innovation, because I thought that was a way to keep these discussions happening on a regular basis and not waiting till after the fact. And so I appreciate moving that forward as quickly as we can. Turning really next to public safety, let me first mention I'm a little bit on the island on this, but last year we reconstituted a SRO program, and I'll send you the update to the rest of council, because this is really mainly impacts those of us that have RISD, and I'm the only RISD high school. But to just give you an update on that program, in 1 year we saw triple digit, which is over 400 decrease in discipline in the school with just the two officers. We had a 60% drop in fights on campus. In-school suspensions have decreased by over 70%, and there's over 300 less days of suspension out of the school, just to name a few of the impact. I don't know if we've invested better than what we did in those two school resource officers, and I'm going to be asking for an increase in that to support our schools and school safety in the areas that are in Dallas but served by RISD, not the DISD police, and so I wanted to make that known. Second, we've, in the Public Safety Committee for the last years, we continue to get briefings because, as was mentioned by several of my colleagues, the officer retention, new hiring, it's an issue that we're facing, and I don't think we have the answer to it yet. In the briefings, we find out more of the strategies we're taking, but we don't see it working yet. And so I don't know what the answer is. I think we've got to really we got to do something to change the game. And I don't, even in all the briefings and all the work and communications we've had with at every level, I don't know what the answer is. So if it's increasing pay, by golly, let's increase pay. Let's find out what that number is we've got to do and do it as soon as we possibly can. Yes, I'm encouraging let's move the meet and confer discussions up as quickly as we can. We've got the more predictability that we have in this, I think, the better. We've been waiting for a while now to even get figured out what the staffing numbers should be. We need to know what those numbers are so we can do what needs to do to hit those numbers. And so there's a lot of questions, more questions than answers, and I remain deeply concerned that we're not able to have the answers that we need. And in the meantime, we just keep trying the kitchen sink approach, which I'm going to be supportive, keep trying the kitchen sink approach until we figure this out. But I think there's ways where we can do this more effectively. I just don't know what the answer is yet. So that's, again, another area of concern as far as fixing this budget moving forward. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I haven't had a first round, but I'm going to go Mr. Kingston, hold just 1 second.
Of course.
Because I promised Mr. Callahan we're going to let him start his second round. So, Mr. Callahan, once you go, then Mr. Kingston, and then Ms. Grayson. Thank you, Mr. Kingston, for allowing that to happen.
I just got passionately involved in my list of things to do, which is getting longer out in Southeast. What will the new indexed MIT rate be of pay? I know that's been going around on a memo, but I just have not seen that.
$11.15 an hour.
$11.15, so it was $10.94, now $11.15. Thank you for that. I'm also interested in that pay equity component there. Just want to make sure, obviously, the women that work here in this organization are treated fairly and they have equal pay for equal work, and I also want to make sure persons of color have that same opportunity. And I know that's, as Mr. Atkins said, that's not easy to do. It's not easy to get there. But I think we need to try, you know, statistically to find out what the numbers are and then try to determine what they're doing, what their skill set is, what their job responsibilities are, and to try to get that to more level. And just, I guess, you used the word optimize earlier. I'd like to use it again. Just let's optimize fairness to the extent that we can. And just the last thing I'll say, going back to the litter, Kim, now sitting in for Mr. Broadnax, is we really need a Marshall Plan in Southern Dallas for litter and illegal dumping. And I know it was rated, I think, a priority two, I think, when we did our council recess, but it is absolutely critical. You know, we've got everything from, you know, the dogs being dumped, you know, the dead dogs on Dowdy Ferry just below my district, tires everywhere, illegal dumping. We've got building materials that are not supposed to be there but are, and, you know, at some point we've got to pick them up just because we can't leave our neighborhoods looking bad. But I drove my neighborhood yesterday, and they already got all the bulk trash put out. You know, it doesn't even start, I don't think, till tomorrow. But, you know, it's already just jammed and piled up all over the district, and we've got to have a means of better education of doing that. And I know we're going to get there, but these are things that are really festering in my district, and we need to go after that. And I know it's not specifically a budget question, but it needs to be a specific budget category rather than just being simply dumped into code compliance or code enforcement. So that's the reason I speak out at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for obliging me, Mr. Kingston. Thank you for obliging me.
I have very little. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just was struck by Mr. Kleinman's comments about holding the budget the same and just increasing for a merit pool, which I think we have frequently referred to as the Medrano Plan. That's been suggested by Mr. Medrano for years. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Kim or TC.
I'd rather be him.
It's kind of a process question. I remember that when we directed you to produce an effective rate budget, we asked for above the line and below the line. Is that how you're preparing this?
Yes, that we would outline, and you asked for it in priority order, those items that would be below the line, essentially, in this kind of budget scenario, and above the line, but yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that's what we were going to see in August. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. McGee?
Yeah, just a comment, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, but we talk about in the budget town hall meetings that are coming up and that we're scheduling and to be going through that. I've also seen a couple examples where we're moving to some of the virtual town hall model, and I think we get really good numbers on the virtual town hall models. I just have not seen a whole lot of really productive input or value in that process yet, at least. You know, some of the data that I get, okay, it helps a little bit, but it doesn't seem as accurate. What I would ask is, there are so many other technologies, the Facebook Lives, the other things that we can just have some more of a hybrid type model. So we're doing our in-person town hall meetings, but also have that live. I would assume we'd have available technology where we could get questions from the community while we're doing these things. And just my request is that we find to have more hybrid technologies available for some of these meetings to get better input as we go forward with these.
I think some of your colleagues in the past have done meetings that have involved different formats, and including those technologies. And so certainly happy to work with you all in terms of what you want to structure. These are your meetings. The town hall meetings are your meetings and your opportunity to talk about the budget. We're certainly there to support and describe the city manager's recommended budget, but this is an opportunity for you all to be in your districts, and we want it to be effective for you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Yes, I guess on the animal service, is that in this budget?
Yes.
Okay. How are we are we going to increase employees there? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, remember I said, you know, Mr. Callahan and in my district, you know, District 4, we got a serious problem, very serious problem. I mean, I have a dog at my district, OTC. We've been trying to catch for 4 days. We can't catch the dog. And we had two trucks there trying to catch the dog. I mean, it's just completely getting ridiculous. So I'm just trying to find out, are we hiring more people, more equipment, you know? I mean, how are we going to get those, the count down?
So last year in the budget, both the recommended budget that you adopted and then in the planned budget, we included funding to fully implement the BCG recommendations regarding animal services, particularly the loose dog issue. So that is built into the plan. Over the summer, we're continuing to look at what might be needed in terms of adjustments or different approaches, because we know, of course, it's a continuing concern, very, very serious concern. And so we're certainly looking at that, and it will be included.
I understand you're looking into it, but it's not getting the headway. It's going backwards. It's going back. And District 8 is going backwards. I mean, across the city, I'm just saying one particular area. In District 8, look at the numbers. The numbers ain't decreased. It's increased. And that's what I'm saying. City-wise, you're doing a great job, but in District 8, the number is increasing. The calls are increasing. And if we just have one dog, I'm going to tell the guy arm off. So we got a major problem. I mean, the other district is great, but I'm just talking about District 8, period. So I need some kind of insurance. How are we going to put more feet on the ground over there, another way to approach or whatever? But I'm getting calls after calls after calls after calls. And it's a problem. And so I don't know if y'all hearing that or not, you know, but I'm saying it's a problem. And I don't want to come down here with a whole lot of people saying there is a problem in their front yard and can't get out of the front yard. There is a problem that I have a dog in my community office right now, been there for the whole week, and we can't catch that one dog in the front, and people can't walk up to the office. That's a serious problem. So I don't know how you're going to take it overall, but it's a serious problem. If I got to do something different, I will do something different. But if it don't go away, I will do something different. So I'm getting too many phone calls from my office. I'm spending too much time on doing this, especially when people are scared to go out the front door. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. T. You okay. Ms. Grayson,
if he want to respond, he can respond. And I hope you would respond, because it's a serious problem. And the Caraway is Ford and Mr. Callahan. Is that a problem in District 5 with dogs?
All right, let's hear from Ms. Grayson. Okay. Hold on
1 second. Thank you, Councilman.
All I was going to say is I'll make sure that the director at Jamison connects with you specifically on what we're doing
right now.
And what some of those numbers look like and what we can do to enhance that, if in fact it's still a problem and we're trying to address it. But as it relates to the budget, it will be something we'll listen to and consider, and we haven't made any of those decisions yet at this point on any additional resources.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. Could I respond to Mr. Atkins just
sure.
a little? We're going to be having some items coming up on next week's budget related to animal services, some changes that we think are going to be helpful, and then we're going to have more of them in August and September. And what we're going after is we're going after irresponsible pet owners, and we think that's going to have a lot of impact on the problem. I think Mr. Jamison is doing a really great job. I mean, the numbers that we get, and maybe they don't apply to District 8, but in general, the numbers we're getting, we're all trending in the right direction. We are picking up lots more loose dogs. We're having a lot higher release rate, live release rate. But we are making changes that we think are really going to help impact the problem even further than we've done already. So look for those, because I think it's going to make a difference.
So, excuse me, can I address Ms. Grayson?
Go ahead.
Is that coming up?
Some of them are coming up.
We got a budget policy. I think some on the agenda for next week.
Some of them are coming up next week. We got a dangerous dog and an aggressive dog ordinance changes to address those problems.
you know, dogs biting other dogs, dogs biting people, and starting to go after the owners who are responsible for these dogs and letting this happen.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to mention, since Mr. McGue brought up the town hall meetings, and I liked what Ms. Raich said. She said these are our meetings, and we can, you know, have our meetings. Well, I see a page in here that says we get to have up to two traditional meetings per council district, and after that, materials will be provided, but I guess no staff. I've always had three meetings in my district, and I would like to continue to have three meetings in my district with staff in attendance. And if these are our meetings and our opportunity to talk to our constituents, I would prefer to be allowed to do that. Mr. Kingston mentioned stepping on his toes. I kind of feel like this restriction is stepping on my toes. I would like to continue to have three meetings with staff in attendance. Mr. Broadnax?
Yes, ma'am. And so I think three meetings is doable. I think the challenge, quite honestly, is we're trying to do this in about a 2.5-3 week period. And 15 or 14 times three, and some districts have five and six, it's a strain to get out and have adequate staff coverage. And so that was the issue, was really to try to manage the expectations of staff being available to assist and do the meetings. And so, again, I think three is I think I'd recommended three at some point, and we talked a little bit about one being an alternative meeting that was not an in-person meeting. So, again, we followed the council's lead. The issue is just a staffing challenge of trying to get 43 to 45 meetings done in a two-week period.
You know, I understand the problem. I do, but I also feel as though we should be allowed to do what we think is best in our districts in order to reach our constituents. And in my district, three meetings has been an effective way of getting everyone in the district to feel like they're having a meeting close enough to them that they can get to it and they can give me some input. And, you know, we've made a big deal here out of, you know, being available to our constituents in a number of different ways, district offices and other ways, and so this is how I reach my constituents. I would like to be able to do this and not be limited to two.
And so part of the slide's purpose was to have this type of discussion, one, so we could articulate the staffing challenges, but to really accommodate what we would say is a unified number of what council may believe is acceptable for, again, staff that in some cases during those 3 weeks don't get to see much of people that they live with. And so that was really the challenge, and that's all. So we'll do however council wants us to do. It was just...
Well, my request is that you all accommodate three meetings in District 12. Thank you.
All right. You said in District 12. Okay.
If other council members...
Yeah, no, I was just making sure that there was three...
Three in District
12. You have three.
We've already submitted our date. Thank you.
Got it. Mr. Kingston.
I was just going to note that in the spirit of equity, my people don't care about in-person meetings. We've got 10 times the participation when we go to virtual or online. And so Ms. Grayson is welcome to my extra meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let me all right. What I've heard is an array of different concerns that we have. That we need more police, we need more money, we need fixing more streets, we have stray dogs, we need to do alleys, we need to watch the tax rate. If indeed, it's my opinion, I had some things I was going to talk about as relate to streets and alleys. I think we need to concentrate on that. I saw something on page 8. I still have a concern as relate to storm drainage. Every year since I've been on the Dallas City Council, every year we've increased storm drainage fees. And I've said to how can we effectively make an impact on not increasing, but trying to figure out a way how we can decrease the need of having to have to increase. And I continue to say, as we're driving down the street,
they're cutting the grass in the medium. It's blowing down in our storm drain systems, and we're not doing anything about it. We talk about storm drains, but we're the ones that's clogging up the drains or allowing the drains to be clogged up because we're not administering what I feel we should be doing, and that is making the people that's cut the grass put a little bag on there to catch the grass. That includes the city mediums with good earth. They're cutting it. It goes right out into the street. It goes right out into the storm drains, and then every single year we're raising up the rates. Now, that's just a couple of concerns. Number one, let me just say to Mr. Griggs and to Mr. McGew that I agree with the fact that we need to do something with police. And I want to say that everything that we're talking about as related to the police is not just the police's fault. It is not the chief's fault. It's not the police's fault. It's our responsibility to figure out what we're going to do to put the tools in the box so that the police can have ample police to deal with response time, to deal with pay. That's not their problem. It's not Chief Hall's problem because the police are not getting the money that they need to have. That's our problem, and we got to figure out what we're going to do about it. You know, now's the time for us. If we're going to show our love, every time the police come, we talk about we support the police and we want the police to do this and do on them and all of that. If we're going to solve the problem, to Mr. Griggs and to Mr. McGew and to all of us here, we're going to have to step up to the plate. And we're going to have to be big boys and big girls, and y'all going to have to deal with some things. We need to address it, and I know y'all going to have to buckle your seatbelt, but there's somehow we're going to have to find the money. And that money is not just going to be just for the police, but all of the problems we talked about, and we want to talk about not raising taxes. But now, somehow, something's going to have to be done. Because if we don't have the money, and we still have, Mr. City Manager, all these needs, and then we don't want to cut here and there, we want to keep things stable, somehow for the next 2 to 3 years, while we have an opportunity to do so, we're going to have to figure out where we're going to find some fresh money from. Other than that, we're going to have to cut something. We're going to cut the library. We're going to cut the arboretum. We're going to cut cultural arts and cultural fairs, and we're going to have to cut back in streets. We're going to have to do something in order to find the money that we need to solve the problem. I'm saying, let's get this problem out of the way. Let's find the money from somewhere. Let's go to our constituents. When we go to the bond program and we get to talking about we need to pass a bond, we got to do the same thing as relate and should do the same thing as relate to our public safety and other needs that we have in the city. I don't want to do it. I'm not trying to advocate that we have to do it. I don't think that the 5% may not be the way, but I support the effort of a 5%, but I also question, is that the way with 5%, or do we say to the taxpayers, and Mr. Attorney, you come to the microphone, tell me how, because maybe we need a referendum. Maybe we need to not let the city council decide this. Maybe we need to go out and let the people decide whether or not we want to keep them safe and we want to go find the money. What is it that we're going to do, not for the rest of our next 5 or 10 years, but let's figure out something. I'm for solving the problem. What can we do? You and I had a conversation, so kind of explain some of the things we were talking about as related to referendums, as related to raising taxes, the pros and cons about it, because I'm only holding this conversation to begin a conversation of how we can reach a solution so we won't have this problem next year and year after next, and we can pay our police what they should be paid, and we can give the tools to the police department and fire, public safety, and then other things, streets, alleys, street lights, stray dogs. We don't have enough people with the dog problem. Mr. Attorney, you better stop me. I'm going to try to.
Mayor Pro Tem, I
turn the clock on, so now that's good. Don't turn that clock on, turn it off. Go ahead.
Just a quick summary of current law. The current rollback rate, which is the rate above the effective tax rate on the books right now, is 8%. This body has the power to raise the tax rate up to 8% without kicking in the need for a petition. If you go above 8%. You can go on your own volition to the voters. You don't have to, but if a properly signed petition is presented to this body, if you do go above the 8%, it will trigger a rollback election. So that's current law. As many of you know, there has been much discussion in the paper recently coming out of Austin about several proposals being introduced next session to change that law and lower the effective tax rate.
So what would that do according to where we are and what you're hearing from the council?
Well, depending upon how the math works out, Mayor, I don't know what numbers a raise would trigger, what that rate looks like. If you go above the 8%, you could trigger a rollback election, and or you could take that to the voters. If you don't reach that 8%, there will be no need to go to the voters.
Okay. And thank you, Council, and to everybody here. One of the first things that can happen to get you unelected is to start talking about raising taxes. But now we have a responsibility to fix what our problem is. I don't know what we should do. I'm just kind of kicking a conversation up so we can make a decision that either we're going to want our citizens to have the streets, the potholes fixed, the sidewalks fixed, the police with greater pay raises and being able to compete with the cities that have their tools already in place and the money to do what we're doing. We're suffering. I don't know what to do. I just want to kind of kick it off, and you guys and all of us, as we go through the budget process, just kind of take it out there and flip it around a little bit and see what our alternatives are. Either we're going to fix it or we're going to have to live with it the way it is and the way it is right now to compound 10 more years on top of the things that we're talking about right now is only going to make it worse. So we got to figure out something. That may not be the way, but whatever way, I just challenge the council for us to find it. And I'm getting ready to close. As related to the some of the other things that I heard, the meetings that we just talked about, to the city manager, our districts, configuration of our districts are so different that I'm not speaking for Mr. Atkins in District 8, nor not just mine in 4, but our districts are so scattered that encompasses and forces us to have maybe more meetings. And as Mr. Kingston said, he doesn't have to necessarily have as many. But depending on it, and I have found virtual town halls on telephones to be effective. I don't want us to say it's going to be and put a cap on 3. I want Ms. Grayson for you to have your 3, but somebody might need to have 4. So I don't want to have the cap of 3 on somebody that might need to have 4. And then those that might can get away with having 1, and I'm very sensitive to the staff, but we need to kind of see where we are and utilize the flexibility of the council member who feels that his district should have a certain number of meetings and who should not. I personally am moving as quickly as I can toward more of the virtual town hall meetings because I get more people, okay? But I got to have one over here and one over here and one over there. I'm willing to attempt to try to get it done that way, but I don't want to be tied and capped the city council moving forward to having 3 when some may need to have 4 and because we've been working to bring them down. So I just kind of want to say those things. And let me say this, council. We were supposed to be out of here at 12 o'clock. That was the goal. But it was not my fault because I didn't say anything to right now. It was all of y'all. Every one of y'all. Everybody took their 5 minutes, and you took your second rounds, and you took your third rounds and talked with one another. So we're still here with something that we had intended to get out at 12. It's going to be up to the council now. Let me get up. We're going to keep going. All right. Listen, I'm just trying to make sure that everybody's on one accord. That's what we're going to do because there's some birthday cake out there, and we don't want the cake to just sit there. If somebody's celebrating their 16th birthday, and I want to make sure that we get that done on the record. So now while we're in the transition, why don't we sing the happy birthday while they are transitioning to the second round? and we can make sure that that's done at the appropriate time. So, so Ms. Callahan?
Yes, everybody ready?
We've got to announce who it is.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Councilwoman Jennifer Gates.
Happy birthday to you.
And many more.
Right. All right, Mr. City Manager, we're going to move into our second and our last briefing. And so tell them to keep the food warm downstairs because we just can't wait to get to it. And we'll move into our 311. Mr. T.
Thank you, Mayor. Your second briefing is an overview of the replacement of the city's request service request software and the use of the contact management software in the city council offices themselves. And so I've asked them to be brief and to go through it to save time for council questions. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Margaret Wright. I'm with 311, and we're going to just, in the interest of your time, we're going to go straight to slide five. So, as you know, we are kicking off an implementation of new service request software. The product we are implementing is Salesforce. We kicked off our project in November, and we are on track for a go-live at the end of August. Move on to slide eight, please. So currently, we are in progress. Staff is actively working. One of the steps that we've taken that you'll see is we have reduced the number of service request types to make it easier for your constituents to know what do I need to submit to get my issue addressed. We've trained staff on system configuration, and we've completed configuration of 240 public-facing service request types, which is a reduction from approximately 400 that we've had so far. On the next slide, we've created a SharePoint site for staff to keep up with what's happening on the project, and our vendor that we're working with has helped us create some reports. So we've got standard reports available, dashboards, and then custom reports that we'll build as needed. On the next slide, this software will integrate with several other city systems. As you see there, Dalforce, which we're going to talk about, that's the tool that you all have available to you, and then individual systems that are used in various departments, Active Directory, our GIS for mapping, and then the Socrata Big Data tool. We're going to show you just in the interest of time, just a view of a test system right now, and it is truly, again, we are in test, so I just want to give you a view of what the home page for our residents would see on the website. So this is the tool that customers would see when they're looking at the website to submit a service request. You'll see it's a very simple layout. There's the search bar, how can we help, up at the upper right. Customers have an opportunity to sign in if they want to register, and what that would do is when they're creating a service request, it automatically populates their information and makes it easier for them to find their service requests. On the left side, you'll see we have categories of service requests, the most popular, and then a variety of various, again, categories of service request types. And on the right, because what's selected at the top left is popular service requests. Those are our most popular service requests. Again, this is just to give you an idea of the layout of the system. It's very simple, and we expect it to be very user-friendly. That's our goal. So switching back to the presentation itself, I'm going to turn it over to Bill Finch to talk about how on slide 12 – what our new mobile app is going to be like. And Bill, you want to take that over?
Good afternoon. I'm Bill Finch. I'm the Chief Information Officer, IT Director. And as Margaret said, this is something new. I mean, what you've got today is an app almost for every technology system that we have out there. And so as a user, you have to download these apps. And so at some point on your mobile device, you could end up with 10, 15, or 20 of these. We think we're being one of the few cities that's actually doing this right now, where we're looking for a single solution in which all of these different apps, such as Recollect for Sanitation, 311, Finding Rover, whatever it may be out there, that we will be able to bring all of those apps under one application on your smart device. And so, and it's beginning with Salesforce. The particular technology that we're using was partnered with the integration firm that we're using to implement this new 311 system. So on page 13, these are some planned enhancements that are coming. There's some artificial intelligence with this technology, meaning you can take a picture of a pothole, and from that image, it will fill out some of the fields that you would typically have to do if you were having to type that in to a service request. The next thing is that we're finding very common out there is natural language, voice commands. I want to speak what I want to say or how I want to open a service request. Instead of typing it, you can actually speak that into it. And so this will just continually get smarter and more intelligent as we and the users of this system interact with it. So we're looking forward to this. We think this is going to be a pretty innovative solution out there. Now I'm going to switch to page 15, and we'll jump right into Dialforce. You heard Margaret mention 311 connected to this. This was actually the first Salesforce system that was implemented in the city for the mayor and council in your offices. It's a contact management system. It's a centralized tool that would help you track information, contacts about what people are calling your office about, issues, policies, etc. It moves us away from, you know, spreadsheets that are individually kept and stored on your computer, or multiple computers up there. So we believe that it'll improve your response time to your constituents, and it'll streamline the handling of all the information that you might have stored in different files and parts on your computer. Page 17. Again, the background of this is it's a Salesforce system. Software as a service. It's web-based. It's accessible from all types of internet browsers. It works on your smart mobile devices, and it, again, is configured for the mayor and council offices. Page 18, again, as Margaret said, it interfaces with 311. As I mentioned earlier, it replaces a lot of the single file kind of clunky spreadsheets that might be used to track calls and emails about your constituents. You're having to jump from system to system to system. This brings everything into one place. Again, it'll track the constituents across districts. It supports greater collaboration, and it can be used to inform policy decisions and performance measures. You can it'll capture sentiment. You can ask for up, down, you know, do you like this or like that? You can capture that right in the system. Page 20. Our next steps for this are we've completed demonstrations of this product to your staff. The system is ready and available now. In fact, it's used by four district offices pretty significantly, and by two others, they're growing into it. We do need to finalize some reports and dashboards information that we're getting from your offices about what would be helpful. If there's any spreadsheets, files that you have on your PC that you would like loaded into that electronically, digitally, we can help do that so you don't have to rekey all that in from one system to another. And then begin to register for classroom sessions, training. And we hope to maybe have a lot more on this by August of 2018. And with that, questions.
Okay. All right, I'm going to make sure y'all are through because I kind of cut Ms. Wrench off the last time. I want to apologize to you. All right, Ms. Thomas.
All right. First, I want to say, Marty and Bill, thanks, Marty. Thank you for coming out and talking with my community and neighborhood leaders. You came to our monthly breakfast and gave a lot of insight. At that time, there was a lot of my constituents, some of the leaders, who had some issues with 311, and you were able to give some clarity. And Bill, thank you for the one-on-one sessions that we had about this. Colleagues, I requested this briefing. I tell you, I don't know how many of you were familiar with with Dow Force. I know Councilman Kleinman and Gates have been using it for a while, and they thought highly of it. And so I want to make sure, one, you were aware of it, aware of the how it can be really utilized to help us in terms of with what's important to our constituents, with our staff in terms of just collecting data to help us to know what's priorities. Even something that Bill shared with me, part of the data, for instance, in Southern Dallas, we have an issue with food deserts. And so we can keep a record of how many people feel like that's an issue or whatever it is in your district. And so I want to make sure that whether it's something that you see benefit in or not, you at least are aware that this is available as a tool. I do have a few questions and then some concerns. One concern in particular is that when our service requests are reported, some of them being reported as closed, but actually what's happened is it's another department that's addressing that. So when our constituents take that service request number, because I've been preaching for 3 years, keep your service request number. That's how you track whatever that case is. They'll call and they'll say, well, they'll be told, well, this is closed, but actually it's not the department that initially, for instance, it may be something that initially they thought was a code issue, but it's a sanitation issue, and it reports back as closed. And so I wanted to make sure, I don't know if you were aware of that, I want to make sure you're aware of that and what we can do to correct that. And then also my staff, this morning we talked before I came in, they said the notes aren't consistent in terms of there's a button you can click and you can find out the details, and sometimes it's available, sometimes it's not. I want to make sure that in the new system that we don't have those same issues.
No, sir. The new system corrects all your points that you're making regarding service requests that come in as one thing but then get changed to something else and it has to show closed. That was a deficiency in the current technology that we've been using for almost 20
Excuse
years.
Me 1 second.
Everybody can't leave. Let me make sure. You out the door first. You back. Hold on. Somebody's going to be held hostage. Lock the door. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right.
We got it.
Nobody else can leave. Yeah. So don't even attempt to. Don't even attempt to leave. All right. Go ahead. Complete.
All right. And then second, it was brought to my attention with the other system. The GPS mapping was off. Is that something that will be fixed, at least to the best of its ability, with our new system?
Yes, sir. New system will be far more robust.
Excellent. Well, I want to make an appeal. If you have not or you're not using the system, it really, really helps tremendously. They even have an app that you can download for your phone where you can kind of monitor what's going on while you're away from City Hall and as it relates to these issues, concerns being brought by our constituents. So thank you, and Mayor, in his absence, I think this is really important. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, Mr. Atkins.
Shall I speak to Ms. Gates?
Absolutely.
Hey, Jennifer. Do you use the system?
Yes, I use the system.
Could you tell us, in your words, how do it work and how do it help for you? Since I haven't used it, I'm trying to find out, one of my colleagues who do use it, how do you think about it?
Well, that we use the Salesforce that we've had operating for a few years. And the way we track all constituent, any service requests, then we link it to that constituent. And then that way we have a history of all issues they've called in before. So we can track, service requests that either come through our office or that gets forwarded. Right now we haven't been able to track ones that have just gone through 311, but I think now we'll be able to start integrating when this goes live. So we use it, uses it for that. And then if there's, positions, if there's an issue, be it housing or policy or whatever it might, we get input, then we can also track, or in a zoning case, we can track if people are for or against. And then we could pull up, we call it an opportunity, and if it's whatever that opportunity is, and then look at everybody's positions, and then we can also map their positions on a map. And so could see, like, proximity to where the location is, who's opposed to it, and who's supportive of it. And then other, like, you know, policy decisions like affordable housing or whatever it might be, and we get input. We put it all in there and tag that constituent to that position, and then we can pull up and see, you know, where people are siding on different issues. So it's a great way of tracking just, you know, input and then emails from our constituents. So when I go to call somebody back, I know they've called me about X, Y, and Z, and I know how the city's addressed it or not addressed it. Or so that's how my office uses the Salesforce at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Carway.
All right, Ms. Grayson.
I would add one more to that. So when we do, if somebody, like if it's a zoning case or if it's an issue in the neighborhood and they want to become updated on it, that way we don't have to, like, send out emails to everybody. We can just email all those individuals that have asked us to be kept abreast of a situation or a project or whatever it might be, and then we connect it to Constant Contact and then have that group that gets that email, and we can just keep them updated on a regular basis. So that's a really nice way to keep people communicating.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So it sounds useful for the individual council offices, but it's like one giant spreadsheet, right, where everybody can see everybody else's council district office, what's happening there. Is that an accurate statement?
You can, yes, ma'am. So it's a it's on a single database,
mm-hmm.
but each of you have your own licenses set up, view. You can set up yours, so it's set up for each district office, but, you know, back in the back office, it's all on one database, but it is available to share and collaborate with. So if you get a call from of an issue that might be in another district, you could actually share that kind of information across to that district versus having to say, call district office such and such.
But if I wanted to know everything that was going on in District 14, I just go to the database? No. I'm not going to call you. I'm just going to go to this database and look at it and see what kind of input Mr. Kingston's been getting.
If he allows you to do that in the system.
Okay, so you can't just go to everybody. You'd have to get their permission
to share.
To
That's
access
right.
theirs?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
As Ms. Gates is saying, we've got it open now because that group that's using it wants to share across, so they don't want it restricted across district offices.
But if you do want it restricted, you have that ability to do so.
We could restrict it.
But there is somebody who's looking at all of this.
Oh, sure.
Because
sure.
it's one database
right.
that you said in the back room
right.
sees everything that's going on in everybody's office.
Right. That would be, in technology, that's what we call the system administrator.
Yeah. Okay. But you do have to have permission to access versus...
Well, right now, it's not a permission thing. We've just, because that's the way the offices wanted to operate that are using it, so we've opened it up. So it's open.
It's
so
open.
Everybody can see everybody's district.
Right, and that's if they want to. But what
right.
if they don't want to?
Then we would work to find a restriction, a configuration of how to restrict that office.
Okay, I just wanted to know what the possibilities and restrictions are. Thank
okay.
you.
All right, Ms. Callahan.
Yeah, Mayor, I'll be quick. Just thank you for the presentation. Bill, I know we've had some offline discussions about, you know, kind of more intuitive type programming that we've seen at MLC or TML, and so I'm really pleased to see this. We've been needing an intuitive system that kind of accumulates all of this information so you can check, and well, it's great when you can go to, like, one address and find out there's been 14 service requests at that house, and then you can also find out that kind of the efficacy of your tracking or customer service delivery, you know, like, are they pleased with that or not because they keep having all these service requests. So those things are very helpful. And also looking across district lines to see, you know, what percentage of complaints are we in the same universe? Are we similar or dissimilar? I think we can learn from that. So looking forward to utilizing this in the 311 program, even just the nominal changes you've already made, you know, and tracking helps a lot more without having to do a lot of typing.
because when we're out in the field working, you know, it's, you know, time is of the essence, and trying to just crank these programs out or complaints or service requests, it's a challenge when you don't have these subcategories. So I'm appreciative that we've got more of those to work with now. So really looking forward to August. Is it August yet? Let's get it going. Thanks.
All right, Mr. McGee.
I just want to say thank you, Bill, for your work on this. I know it's been a long time coming, pulling all this together, but I appreciate your efforts.
All right. Ms. Gates.
Thanks. I just have a quick question on, you know, because I find that the current app, the 311, I use it myself, and I know I have a lot of constituents that use it. So that's going to become obsolete as of this August?
Yes.
And so how are we going to communicate with all those users that to download the new app?
So we're working with Public Affairs and Outreach to develop a marketing plan and a communication plan to let customers know, you know, we're moving from A to B, so to speak. So that's a plan in development right now.
Because the one that we're using now, you can't send them over, right? I mean, that's we contract out for that. So there won't be any. What will happen when people think they're using that app, or will it say this app is not operational?
We should be able to work with Apple and Android, those kinds of companies, to put an expiration message on the current app that's out there, because we don't install that. That is installed.
I know. That's
from,
what. Yeah.
From
that's my
stores.
Concern, though. People are going to still think they're.
Yeah, we will figure out a way to communicate, one, as Margaret's saying, and then hopefully we can do some things
to redirect
electronically from the, if they try to use it, that, you know, they can send a message. You know, you get alerts when you need to update your mobile device. We're looking into how, is there a way to do that to notify them that that current app is expiring and that they will need to download a new app.
Okay, I'm happy to share it out. I mean, right. I'm not quarterly newsletter. So if you have like a flyer or how you want it worded with the exact dates and how people can get the new app, please share that with me. I'll make sure I get that out. And,
thank you.
You know, we'll in July. Thanks.
We'll be right.
Thank you, Ms. Gates. And let me close by saying, you know, I'm a supporter of 311. To our city manager, I have just one request, and that is get 311 out the basement. They don't have any windows down there. I've taken a tour. They have claustrophobia down there, so let's figure out what we can do to get them out to Dunyon. I hope 311 is listening. You know you have my support. It is 12:18. This meeting of Dallas City Council is now adjourned.